portion of the meeting. My name is Jim Kellogg. I'm president of the commission. And to my left is Bob Trainer, the executive director of the commission. And to his left is Bill Cunningham from the Attorney General's office and our counsel for the commission. And then down below is Adriana Landrum, a special assistant to the executive director. And to my right is Sonke Master, deputy director of the department. And with that, Mr. Trainer, if you would tee up the first item for us.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Just one more thing. We also have Nancy Foley, who is Assistant Chief of Enforcement for the Northern California North Coast Region, with us today in the back of the room. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Our first item today is a public forum item. It allows the public an opportunity to provide issues to the commission and or ask questions of the commission. This item allows for the public to make these presentations in 5 minutes or less, and then the commission has the opportunity to schedule the issue for a future commission meeting and or ask the department to respond to the issue or the question raised. Our first speaker this morning will be Mike Lucia, mayor of City of Dunsmuir, followed by Dick Peroni.
Yeah, up on top.
Those cards, the three that I gave you together, they're donating their time to him.
I won't take long. I only have eight or nine items here that I'm going to read. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to hear us, to address the commission. And we realize our request is outside the normal angling regulation cycle and appreciate your consideration. The local area in Dunsmuir is suffering economically and would benefit from increased angling opportunity. We request the commission to consider opening the upper sack to a zero-limit catch-and-release fishery from 11/18 to late April, perhaps on a trial basis until the next regulation cycle. We feel there is no apparent biological or environmental reason to prohibit this idea. We note that the Fish and Game encourages consideration of zero-limit fisheries on areas otherwise closed by the commission, and we believe it is in the best interest of trout anglers and the local economy. As such, the City of Dunsmuir recently passed a resolution for the year-round fishery. I have a copy of these I'll just pass out. And we have a host of supporters. I didn't want to indenuate you with a bunch of paperwork that include the city resolution, our local business owners, and angling groups. Thank you very much for your consideration, and we would beg that you would please consider this for an agenda item on your next meeting, please. Just to show you how financially strapped we are, we have one gold seal, the other are copies. We can't afford it. So I'll give these two, and thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for coming.
Sir, do you have a specific reach of the river that you'd want open?
We would like all three zones if possible. The whole area is kind of depressed, and we feel it would encourage tourism. It would keep the right fishermen there, the true sport fishermen. And like I said, we in our small, narrow minds, can see no real biological or environmental reason. There are three zones, if I'm not mistaken, 38 miles of the upper sack. Thank you.
Did you want Zonke to respond?
Zonke, does the department have any response to that you'd like to offer for that request?
Our local region is aware of the proposal and has been looking at it, and the initial feeling from the fisheries is that it's something that's doable. The question is when do you bring that on? I mean, we've set our fishing regulations already, so it's kind of up to the commission whether they want to go through the process of changing the regulations mid-course? In other words, do we wait till next season, start the fishing season with the new regs, or do we? Does the commission prefer to do it before that?
Well, we'll take a look at it because I can't do anything on my own anyway.
Well, Mr. President, you could direct us to look at it if you wanted. Mm-hmm.
We'll have the director of the commission take a look at what your request is, and we'll share it with the rest of the commissioners and decide where to go from there.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm Dick Perrone now. I get a little nervous up here, so bear with me. If you want to change our lingcod to 30 inches and one fish, you know, we go out there and spend $50 for a fishing license. You've already cut our limits from 20 fish down to 10 fish. You're restricting the limits inside the limits to two scorpion fish, including the the greenling and the capizone in the 10 fish limit. I don't think I want to go over there and spend my money for motels and bait and gas and whatever else, restaurants, wherever else I have to do to go catch one fish and 10 small bottom fish. And I don't think you're going to hurt that economy by doing this. And as far as changing regulations midstream, why not do it to them? You do it to us all the time. Hell, we never know what we're going to catch out there or when we're going to get stopped for doing something wrong. I think you guys can hear me, but I think you better listen, because a lot of people are getting upset with this kind of crap. If you want to limit the fish, why don't you put your punch cod out there? Let us catch 10 lingcod for the year and 100 bottom fish and make it the rest for everybody. Because these guys go out in these party boats. There's some of those guys who go out there 50 times a year and catch more fish than I'll even think of catching in a year. You better start listening to these fishermen. I don't know where you're getting your books, but you better stop reading them and listen to these guys that know how to fish. That's all I got to say.
Thank you for taking time and give us your comments.
Our second item is dealing with the lingcod regulations, and then there's an agenda item tomorrow. But Mr. Wolf, you're talking about the same thing too, or
no.
Mr. Burns?
They'll save the butter.
Beg your pardon?
They'll save the butter. You're doing a wonderful job for us as far as our license, you know, our breaks and everything. If you would consider an amendment where the either 50% to 100% or 70% to 100% or 100% only would have the right to hunt any area in the state of California without having to go through these draws. Where we normally, living up north here, we don't get drawn that much for the areas we'd like to hunt. I mean, it's just a consideration. I'm asking for myself and other disabled veterans, and with an assistant. They're like myself anymore, I can't walk. My boys generally will hunt the deer down to me, or, you know, will work out to me, dragging up, warming, cleaning and stuff. But I've been out ever since I was about 9 years old with a .22 rifle down Lake County. And I'll pop them, shoot them in the head, and then, you know, wound them, and they're dead. And I love hunting, even with my heart surgery and everything. If I'm going to die, I want to die up there in the woods and enjoy the sport that I've always enjoyed. So I would appreciate just a consideration for us veterans that are from 50, 70, or 100%, whichever way you would like to balance it. I'm sure we will not hurt the influx of other hunters. There's not that many of us in the state of California that are within that area. So I'm just asking in consideration. I would appreciate you thinking of it. I want to thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Did you want to respond, Deputy Director?
Well, as the commission knows, this is the whole point system and allocation of deer has been a very long-term ongoing process. We recently implemented the point system. The good news is there are places to go hunt for deer all over the state where you don't have to worry about the zones or getting a tag. We have looked at this senior citizen veteran issue. There are some legal issues that we've run into. And at this point, it would probably require some legislation to be able to take advantage of something like that.
Well, I think he brings up a good point, Sonk, and if we need to find out if it requires legislation, because there are other states that have special programs like that for seniors and veterans, and somehow they make them work, and I don't know why we couldn't do the same thing. So. We'll take a look at it.
Yeah, if the commission prefers, we can give you kind of a status on what it would take, you know, both in terms of regulation and, if any, code to implement a program like that and what that might be. I mean, we can come back to you with a report on that.
Why don't we just do that then?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bob Burns, followed by Ross Smith. Bob Burns in the room.
I'm Ross Smith.
Okay. Mr. Smith, followed by Norm.
You may find me a little emotional today because I am teed off. I'll start right out and I'll just read this because I've got old timers. My father was a great fisherman, and I fished from the time I could just hold a fishing pole. I was taught to observe conditions of the water, habitat where fish congregate, how and where fish spawn, what various species feed on, and how much cover or structure must be in a pond or lake to provide a proper ecosystem. One thing I learned, it's impossible to fish out a pond, lake, stream, or most importantly, an ocean with hook and line, to which the sportsmen of California have been restricted to for as long as I can remember. Some states allow limb lines as many as they want, trot lines with multiple hooks as long as they want, and they can only take limits. What's the problem? None. I've fished the North Central Coast since 1948, and I never thought I would see the day that sportsmen would be accused by California Fish and Game of exploiting several species of rockfish. That ling cod would reduce from limits, first from 10 to 5 fish, then 5 to 2. Now you want to reduce from 2 to 1 and 30 inches in length. That abalone limits would be reduced from 10 to 5, from 5 to 4, then 4 to 3, and now 24 per year and a report card. That rockfish would be reduced from 20 to 10. That our fishing time would cease when the commercial fleet reaches their quotas, which are thousands of metric tons. I thought you were finally seeing the light by giving back more fishing time, 10 months instead of 4. Decreasing the size of lings from 26 inches to 24 inches. Now you want to reduce our limits further to one ling cod and 10 rockfish, and this includes greenling and cabezone as part of the rockfish limit when they are definitely not rockfish. I personally have not seen a decline in greenling or cabezone. Maybe the commercials have had a decline in their catch, but not me. Again, I ask, why are we bunched in with the commercial fishermen in the first place? You can't even prove in any manner that we are part of depleting the resource problem, because we are not the problem and never have been. The sad part of this whole affair is you don't know, nor do you care, because we're the easiest to point a finger at and to call us exploiters of the resource. I had hoped with the appointment of the new Fish and Game Director that the insanity of the past 5 years would come to an end. But here we are back again for more of the same. You've doubled my cost to fishing in the ocean by forcing me to buy a full license that I have absolutely no use for. You've reduced rock fish limits to a point it's no longer economical to go fishing. It's cheaper to buy the fish from the commercials you are saving the fish for. You're ruining my retirement that I've looked forward to for so many years. And when I was reduced to 8 months fishing and 4 months fishing, I'm pissed. We sports fishermen are already paying 99.9% of Fishing Game's budget, while the commercials pay 0.1%. And they are taking 99.9% of the fish. You people say we're getting 7%. I challenge you to provide the data, and don't give erroneous data such as there are so many million license holders and project a false amount of fish being taken. Example, read the Near Shore Fishing Management Plan. Sorry, I lost my place. See how much data is projected and not fact in this piece of garbage. Most license holders only get out once or twice a year, and they pay you dearly for that privilege. They are restricted by many factors, such as lack of leisure time, lack of seaworthy boats, plus weather and ocean conditions. That's why we have recreational party boats to take the fishermen who do not have the means to fish the ocean in any other manner. Recreational party boats, as you say in the NFMP, are part of the problem. Wrong. They are not part of the problem. They can only take limits. And I say again and again, it's impossible to exploit any body of water, ocean, lake, stream, or farm pond with one pole, two hooks, and a limit of 10 fish per person. 90% of the people holding fishing license are inept. And I know this because I teach fishing as a part-time thing in the ocean. I teach rock fishing. I'm known as the rockfish king or the rockfish guru of the North Coast. Most people, 90% of the people holding fishing licenses are inept and rely on luck. And luck just doesn't cut it. 10% of fishermen catch 90% of the fish. And if you people don't know this, resign your jobs because you don't deserve them. Having a PhD doesn't make you smart. It also takes common sense. As your Nearshore Fishery Management Plan, Chapter 1, Section 1, it is, in a word, garbage and lies. I read the first four pages and found the words exploited or exploitation referring to recreational fishermen six times. This is not true, has never been true, and I defy you to show us the proof. And if your name is attached to this garbage right here, this makes you part of this criminal conspiracy. Perjury is a felony. The California Fish and Game and National Marine Fisheries have not only allowed the commercial fishermen to rape our ocean, but they provided them with loans to buy boats, nets, traps, long lines, and any other means they could find to take or destroy as bycatch anything they could get. Now you have the nerve to accuse our California sportsmen of exploiting the ocean. How dare you? As to lingcod, to reduce the limits further and increase the size is absolutely insane, as is all your actions against sports fishermen the past 5 years have been. This past season has been the best ling and rock fishing I've had in years, except the period the Russians were fishing and netting our near shore. The ling have rock been, and rockfish have been on the increase in the north central area. For you to take this away from the sportsmen is criminal because you don't have the research to back your laws. Stop all commercial nearshore fishing until the resource recovers. Give back our ocean nearshore 12 months of the year. Put limits back to 1995 limits and give us a set of regulations that we can understand. In regards to abalone, it is not an endangered species. Stop saving them for the poachers. Restore limits to 4, abolish stupid report cards, and close the season only during spawning. And last but not least, read my handout, which I'll hand out, on rockfish sportsmen and endangered species. And for God's sakes, learn. Thank you.
Thank you. Have you got a handout with you?
Yes. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of stuff you're not going to like. I've definitely got lots of handouts.
Bring it over to the page. Oh, there you go.
Okay. Norm, followed by Ken Willis, please.
Hi, my name is Norm Carr. I represent the California Commercial Beach Fishermen's Association. We're a smelt industry. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the smelt industry in California, but we're kind of an isolated industry that is landlocked in the little town of Oreck, primarily, above Eureka. We have a real problem with recent changes in legislation and enforcement policy regarding fish transportation receipts that have resulted in a situation that has made many of the fisheries impossible or impractical. Changing fishing game codes, section 8047, requiring an accurate weight on fish transportation receipts requires commercial fishermen to weigh their catch prior to transporting it to a licensed receiver. And in most cases, there's no problem with that because you have docks and facilities to weigh the product as you're catching it or bringing it into shore. But we're landlocked fisheries. I catch my fish with my handheld net, and I dump my fish into my truck, which is my boat, and then I transportate those fish to the fisheries. And in order to do that, I have to have an accurate weight. It is required to me. When I come out of the beach zone onto the highway, I have to have a transportation ticket filled out, and it says on there accurate weight. And we have had fishermen get tickets recently for not having an accurate weight on there. We have had fishermen get tickets for not turning in these landing receipts. Both actions have been recently changed. What we would like to see is give us some kind of leeway or an amendment that would allow us to transportate the fish to the fisheries without having an accurate weight, either an estimated weight or a qualified estimated weight. But there's what you got to understand is when you catch these fish in the surf, you also catch debris. You catch sand, you catch rock, you catch gravel, you catch sticks, you catch other small fish, although there are very few of those. But they all add up to weight. And if you put these in an A-frame net at night, which I fish at night, and I'm waiting possibly as far as 60 yards to my truck to dump these fish, I have absolutely no idea how much fish I'm dumping into my truck. I could come within 100 pounds a lot of times on an estimated weight, and I catch as much as 3,000 pounds in a given hour. My truck will be loaded to the max sometimes. That's a pretty easy estimate weight if it's all pure fish. But with the sand and rock and gravel, there's no way I can do that. We also have a problem down at Shelter Cove. For instance, the salmon fisheries down there, they have no permanent fish buying facilities. The small fish buyers come to these ports seasonally or on an all-call basis. Numerous small fisheries, such as the location at Shelter Cove, has no facilities to weigh fish. They have no dock. They have no hoist. So when the fishermen come in, they have to porge their fish in their small dinghies and then hand carry the fish up to their trucks, put them in totes and ice them down, and wait for the fisheries to come and buy them. They have an accurate scale. But if they're not on call or not there when the fisheries fish come to shore, then they're actually breaking the law by taking those fish to shore and icing them down until the fisheries come and buy them. And that's the same with the smelt. You're actually forcing us to break the law. I mean, if I go home tonight, which I could, drive out on Gold Bluff Beach, open the gate up, which I have a special permit to drive on the beach and catch my fish. When I get back to that gate and drive out that gate, if I don't have an accurate weight on there, then I have a chance of getting a ticket. And with my special permit, I'm also obligated to obey all California fish and game laws and state laws. If I get two of those tickets, then I lose my permit. And we've already got fishermen that are fishing out there right now with one ticket over their belt on this transportation issue, with having met with fish and game with three different officers from that area. We've come up with no solution. I met with their commander-in-chief in that area for two different occasions and talked to him several times on the phone, and his answer to the solution was, for instance, I had my own fish company at this time too, buying and selling smelt, and because of that I couldn't even write out a landing receipt or a transportation receipt. So they said, well, start writing out landing receipts. The game wardens told me to do this. So after I started writing out landing receipts for my catch at the gate and then writing out an accurate one once I got to the scale and voiding the original one, they came back to me and said that that was an illegal activity. So, you know, I'm trying to jump through the hoops here and I'm trying to figure out which way I should go, but I have to make a living at the same time. And right now, as my night fish season starts, it will run all the way till October. And the day fish, which is the same kind of smelt, just a little larger, I catch in the daytime, they'll run clear till October. So you're looking at a fishing industry right now that is forced to do illegal actions because there's no amendments on that transportation receipt. And it's the same with Shelter Cove or any other primitive areas that you've got right now where there's no weighing station or buying station set up there permanently. And State Park is not going to allow us to put a scale up at the gate to weigh our fish out. And it's not feasible for me to pack a scale out there and weigh these fish, because every time you handle fish, whether it be salmon or smelt or whatever, you're also increasing the quality downhill. You're knocking scales off, you're warming the product up, you're smashing product, you're doing a bad thing to the product. So the less handling that happens before it gets to the fisheries, the better the product is too. So there's several aspects of this that need to be addressed, and I'd like to see it on the next agenda. And if there's any questions that you have, you feel free to call me and I can answer any questions you've got on this subject. But it is something that has to be addressed, because there's absolutely no way we can do our commercial fishing as far as smelt or salmon there without breaking the law.
Thank you. Donkey, some of the stuff he's talking about kind of makes sense. It reminds me of the us having to change the rules on the boat limits because it was almost unenforceable. And probably we should take a look at giving them a right to have an estimated weight limit till they get to a legitimate scale to give an accurate weight limit or do some. I know he said he's been meeting with your people up there, but seems like there ought to be some kind of a system that we can devise it where they're not getting ticketed for.
They recommended I come to the commission to try to get an amendment because they could not come up with a solution for the problem.
Yeah, the problem, and I certainly sympathize with the problem. The words are just stuck. The rules are the rules. So it sounds like we need to look at a way to change the rules to make this workable from a fishery perspective. I don't know if Marine's prepared to say anything to this now. We'll have to come back to you. Make sure you leave your name and number, and we'll talk to you, see what options there are. I don't know how much of this is in code and how much of it is in Title 14, which can complicate it, but
right.
We'll look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Ken Willis, followed by Virginia Hanley.
Good morning. I'm here to try and get some flintlock tags for the M11 area. The M11 area is a very large area. The Six Rivers Forest alone has 940,000 acres in it. Then there's wilderness areas and BLM land in there with that, plus other Forest Service areas. And right now, in the M11 area, there's only 25 black powder tags. I would like to see that increased to 50 for caplock and 50 for flintlock. 100 tags is not unreasonable for that large of an area. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Virginia Hanley, followed by Paul Weakland.
Hello, I'm Virginia Handley with the Fund for Animals, and I wanted to give you the continuing update on what's happening in the live animal markets and on illegal activity happening in California. I'm sorry that our director Broderick isn't here. I'm happy that he is the new director and that I've heard that he is very interested in enforcement, and I think that is definitely what we need in California. Unfortunately, we're going in the exact opposite direction. I cover the Bay Area. Miles Young was the head warden there, who did as much as he possibly could do for a long time in enforcing the laws, and he used to have 13 people under him. That was taken down to 3. He has now retired. He is not being replaced, and his 3 people are being dispersed. That's my understanding of what's happening. In the meantime, the markets, and I'm talking particularly about the turtles and the frogs, we continue to have illegal species of turtles. Just recently, a whole lot of smooth, soft-shell turtles who are illegal. They're in the markets. You have 3 different species of turtles there. The turtles and frogs mixed up together. All of this in violation of the regulations, in violation of the state law, that is not enforced. There was also a law passed that the local authorities should be passing their local ordinances. That has not happened in any place in California. Also, the illegal pet trade is flourishing and thriving because of this trade. The baby turtles come in by the hundreds because the other turtles are coming in by the hundreds of thousands. Frogs coming in by the ton. All of them non-native species, many of them being released. The illegal pet trade where you have these baby turtles, they are illegal federally. They're not supposed to be under 4 inches because of the danger of salmonella. That is being violated because of the numbers of turtles that are coming in here legally. That also then supports the illegal trade. We're decimating the turtle populations in the other states. A number of other states have stopped their exports of their turtles because their numbers are being decimated. You still have a tremendous amount of poaching that is going on and illegal capturing of these turtles because of the market that California is providing for them. Other states, other countries have banned the importation because of the devastating effects that these animals have on their own populations, not just their own say in California, the western pond turtle or the red-legged frog, those animals who are endangered in California and continue to become even more endangered because of this activity, which we are supporting. They're supposed to have signs up. I know Commissioner Kellogg was not here earlier. In past years where we had the signs and written in Chinese, and yes, they were going up on the walls to tell people that these animals are not supposed to be released into the wild. There are no signs. There haven't been any signs for a long time. As soon as they're up, they're taken down. And now they're just not put up. There's also a state law warning people, any place where retail, where turtles are sold, they're supposed to have a sign warning of salmonella. There have never been any signs warning of salmonella. You have children in these markets, adults certainly, but children too, plus myself, in there, easy access to all these animals and handling them, just trying to go into the turtle bins and turn them right side up so that they aren't in a total misery, which very hard to escape because they're in the process of dying as they're being sold. But there are many that do survive, and just recently a young girl called who had gone into the Oakland market. She bought a turtle. She told them she wanted the turtle as a pet because they offered to kill the turtle. No, she wanted the turtle alive. She wanted him as a pet. So she got him alive. That's against the regulations, although I can certainly sympathize of wanting to get these turtles out alive. What did she do? She took him up to Lake Temescal and released him. She was upset to learn, well, maybe that's not the thing to do because it is a non-native and it's going to harm other animals. You may know about clawed frogs in Golden Gate Park. This was not from the markets, but to show how prominent an activity that this is, it's suspected that these clawed frogs came from UCSF from a research. Here we're talking about the fluorescent fish and the research, oh, no, they won't be released. Well, these clawed frogs, we think, have been released. There's hundreds of them in the park. They are even more voracious than the bullfrogs. I would like to see this commission put this back on their agenda, at least at the very minimum, ask for a report from your habitats department of how many, what's going on with this trade, how many are coming in, what are the effects of these animals being released into the wild. Thank you very much.
Virginia, I just want to say that the new director is, in fact, a huge improvement to the department. And You know, the department and the commission don't have authority over these pet stores.
No, these are not pet stores.
Well,
these are the live animal markets, and you do have authority over them. You do regulate them, in fact.
But, you know, the enforcement problem is a problem for everybody. It's a part of the problem we have in the state of California with the budget. We've reduced over 25% the amount of enforcement people with the department. I wish that the animal rights people would come up with some kind of a way through legislation or whatever to help fund fishing game, just like the hunters and the fishermen do with their licenses and their stamps and tags. And you know, you want to complain about not getting enforcement you want, but you don't want to help pay for it. And you guys need to talk to legislators or somebody about taxing those items and have that money go into the Department of Fish and Game, just like the hunters and fishermen do their items.
The solution to this, the easiest solution for everybody is to simply ban the importation of these animals into California. That is the solution. That is the easiest one. It's much easier to do that.
You just don't want to pay for any help for
why don't you just put out a little collection jar and I'll put in a dollar?
That'll put on.
Why don't you do your own job of, you don't have to have, trying to do the enforcement after the animals are already here obviously isn't happening, doesn't work. They shouldn't be coming in here. Other states are doing this. Other countries have done this. You can do it as the Fish and Game Commission. You can ban the importation. You want me to do my part? I think you should do your part, too.
Thank you for your comments.
Paul Weakland.
Commissioner Paul Weakland, I am sad to see that no one takes this seriously. Michael Flores, Pat Hattoy, Bob Hattoy, their name tags are up there, but they're missing. I thought the new director was going to bring some more, what would you call it, integrity to this body, but it doesn't look like anyone's taking this seriously. Here we are. We've spent a lot of money, time, and effort to come here and bring our concerns. Today I'd like to talk about the abalone concern. Do you know that poaching is running rampant? And recently you caught one of the worst of the worst. They caught him good down Pigeon Point. And he was sweating it, knowing that his commercial fishing license was going to be taken and all this stuff. And he went to court, and he knew it was over. And guess what happened? The game warden never showed up, and they sprung him free. The judge laughed and said, that's par for the fishing game. It's very upsetting. How can anyone have any trust or confidence in what's going on? Here I have a handout, and it talks about some of the situation that in 1997, well, right away we're in error here, because the abalone closure started in 1993. And questions were asked in 1993, why close the abalone statewide if it's only happening in Southern California? Well, the black abalone, they closed it statewide. Then, 2 years later, they started talking, well, we need to close the white abalones, we need to close pink abalones, we need to close green abalones, and we need to close the flat abalones, and we need to close the other abalones. And rather than doing it just from San Francisco south, they closed them statewide. Now, why don't we answer some questions here? Now, for 10 years, we've had a public comment period on abalones, and not one question has been answered. Now, here I've highlighted on the first page of my handout that in 1997, the environmental document was not finalized. So since then, since 1993, we were told the environmental impact report would be conducted and it would be over in 1997. And then we were told, well, you know, you guys, all you did was you asked questions. You know, it'd be better now. You should submit them in writing. Yes, yeah, submit them in writing now. And, you know, we wanted oral comments, but now we want them in writing. So we put them in writing. All right, here are some questions that were asked in 1997, never been answered yet. even though the Fish and Game said that they are required by law to answer these questions, produce a document, all they do is keep camouflaging the absolute. Any reasonable and prudent person can see what's going on. You're misleading the public. You're not being honest. You're more worried about your image and liability than you are the truth and reality. We're getting pretty upset about it. How many more decades must go by before you will become accountable, before some integrity and honor is being shown? I will hope, Mr. Kellogg, now that you're president, we can move forward and things will change and that we will have trust and confidence back in the Fish and Game. Thank you.
That concludes the cards I have for public forum. Our next item is the department's request for the commission to consider emergency action to amend section 28.27 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations, to increase the size limit and decrease the bag limit for ling cod. I believe Maria Bokovich will, Deputy Director Zonke Mastrup will be making the department's presentation on this matter.
Yeah, Maria is still decompressing from her vacation, so I want to break her in slowly. Commissioners, as you're aware, the department issued a press release, I think now a couple of weeks ago, notifying the public that there may be a need to change the bag limit of ling cod to 30 inches and one fish to cope with a situation where we're projected to overfish the OY for ling cod in California by a significant amount. No sooner had we done that than there was new stock assessment information that was developed such that it caused us to request to delay that action until the Pacific Fisheries Management Council had a chance to ponder this information and have them deliberate on it. But as Mr. Joe Blum will probably tell you, is there's very little option here that we see. At this point, it appears inevitable, but we and the director felt it was prudent to allow the council to at least weigh the information and see what their thoughts were on the matter. I think Maria Vojkovich can give you any details about it if you have any specific questions. We have agreed, because of the timing, if the commission so chooses, we would need the commission to authorize to go to public to put a press release out tomorrow or by tomorrow, letting the public know that the commission might be considering an emergency action to conform with the federal regulations. And this is built, this 30-inch one-fish ling cod is built into the regulatory package that I think Joe will clarify if I make a mistake, built into their package, which will be go into effect April 1st? All right. Maria, did you want to add anything, or that pretty much cover it? You don't have to.
And she needs to get her feet wet after all that vacation time. Right. Look, everybody had respect for you when you were speaking. Give them an opportunity and don't be shouting comments, okay?
Thank you, Commissioners. Maria Vojkovich for the Marine Region. Sonke gave you the very brief rundown. I was hoping maybe to give you a little bit more background so that in case you are asked by the department to consider this emergency regulation that you would have a little bit of background. So if you would like that, I can give that, or you can wait until Joe has spoken to you and ask any questions.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. Joe, would you like to make some comments? We're discussing item two for the commissioners who just got here.
Joe Blum on behalf of NOAA Fisheries. Mr. President, members of the commission. These are really perplexing and difficult issues. We think we have something taken care of and done with, and then here we are coming back to you again with a need for you to consider emergency action. I do want to let you know that this is serious. We wouldn't be here if there was not a serious biological reason to be here. This is not an allocation issue. The reality is, in Lincod, I'm speaking specifically to Lincod, that the allocation is predominantly California recreational. And the overages in 2002-2003 are directly recreational overages. And the unit of measure is metric tons in both the commercial and recreational. So while it makes a nice argument that this is an allocation issue between recreational and commercial, it is not. There is, you know this for a fact, there is an awful lot of fishing power on the recreational side, and that fishing power is basically unpredictable. You don't know where it's going to go and what it's going to do and what levels of harvest it's going to take, but the reality is in 2003, the California recreational harvest, not because they're mean, stupid, or bad, just because there are so many and they are so efficient and effective, took more than the entire coast-wide optimum yield and more than the coast-wide acceptable biological catch. In 1999, the Pacific Fisheries Management Council declared lingcod one of the 9 overfished species for which a rebuilding program had to be developed. The rebuilding schedule is to rebuild by 2009. The kind of harvest that has been taking place in 2002-2003, even with restricted limits and restricted time on the water, is something we cannot have and get the rebuilding schedule met. A confusing issue and complicating issue, and it never fails to happen, is we have a new assessment. That assessment shows that the stocks are rebuilding. They're rebuilding very nicely in Washington and Oregon, and they're coming along nicely in California. But the stock is not rebuilt, and the action is going to have to be taken. As Zonke said, one way or the other, the action is going to have to be taken. The Council and National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries, took action on March 1st, effective April 1st, to impose a recreational limit in the federal waters of one fish in a 30-inch size limit and a corresponding fillet size. We are asking that the commission at an appropriate time take similar action to what is called in the federal process conforming regulations. We had hoped you could do it today. We understand the need and the desire for you and us to hear what the council says next week. But we can't let this go on and on and on. So the thing that we would like to strongly support is that you open the door to emergency action later this month by going forward. I believe I've been told by several folks you could do that with a notice tomorrow. That would be a very good signal to us, who are the ultimate managers in the ocean. The council is advisory. And it'd be a very good signal to the council that you are aware of the issue, and you are prepared as appropriate to deal with the issue once you have enough of the facts in front of you. I could sit here and give you minutes and minutes and minutes of facts. You know, the reality is we got a problem. The reality is we are on a rebuilding schedule. The reality is the stocks are starting to show rebuilding. Now is not the time to put them under additional pressure. Another reality is that the actual allowable catch this year is about 50% larger than it was last year. That's already been approved, and that's not going to be affected. What we are trying to do is, by limiting to 1 and to 30 inches, distribute that catch among people and not exceed either the acceptable biological catch or the optimum yield. You know, we all stand a chance of being sued every time we step out of bed in the morning as decision makers. The reason we came up with a rebuilding plan at a particular time schedule is we lost a lawsuit. We, being the Pacific Council and the federal government, lost a lawsuit on Lincoln. So we have now done that. If it looks like to anybody that we are backsliding on that, they'll just go to court and it'll be a slam dunk. That is not necessarily a reason for you to do it. It's a reason for you to take serious the issue and make a reasoned and rational decision. And I think the approach that the department has lined out, and my agency thinks that the approach that the department has lined out is a good approach. But we need to see that you are setting the stage to take action, if action is necessary, in time that it can be implemented by April 1st. If you don't, it's going to fall back on us to decide what action is going to be taken. And the one thing that tends to get overlooked is that if we don't take the action in the recreational fishery off of California, we're going to have to do something in Washington, Oregon, and in the ocean in California that is even more dramatic than we have already done. It's not that we're not going to deal with the issue. It's just where and how are we going to deal with the issue. And we think California recreational needs to be a part of the solution. We hope like heck that by 2009 this discussion is behind us and we don't have to have any more of these kinds of talks, that we have rebuilt the species, we have set some stable seasons and bag limits, and that things can proceed. And the last thing I would like to say is that the assessment that is done under the fisheries management plan that was adopted by the council and approved by us last fall has in it the fact that you cannot take, and this is the federal waters, you cannot take in-season adjustments based on that new assessment. That new assessment becomes a factor for season setting in 2005-2006, which will occur over the next several months. But it was intentionally put in the FMP that this kind of data would not create more pressure on the fisheries without having a reasoned review and the whole package looked at, and that's why it is what it is. So with that, Maria and I and Zonke will try to answer questions.
I was just going to say, from this seat, us not taking the action that falls back on you, and you'll have to do something, it's not a bad position for us to be.
You notice how carefully I laid that out, because I didn't want to make it too attractive. Yeah. But, you know.
Did you want to add anything to that, Zonke?
Well, I think in order for the commission to really weigh this issue thoughtfully, I think if Joe doesn't mind explaining what the consequences are or could be if the commission doesn't take any action. I mean, there's NOAA has certain procedures and things that it believes it might take. I know it might put you on the spot, but I think they need to understand what could result and who might be impacted. Because if I understand this correctly, it could impact our neighboring states.
It will impact your neighborhood.
I think
states.
The commission needs to hear that. If it's
I thought I said that by saying when we took action, yeah, we were going to.
He did
but
say that part.
I also want to say something, and Mr. Flores, I want to indicate to you that this is not a shot across the bow. The last time I made this kind of a statement, you said, is this a shot across the bow? This is just, I've been asked a question. One of the last and worst things we could do is preempt. We don't want to do that. You know, that's absolutely not a smart thing for us to do. It's not a smart position for either of us to be in. But short of that, we've got to do something. We cannot allow a continued over-harvest of the optimum yield and certainly not the acceptable biological catch. So we will have to take some actions. And those actions will start in Washington, Oregon, and California federal waters. And if necessary, a preemption procedure, but I you know, please, that's not what we want to do. We've never done it on the West Coast. We've talked about it a couple times with Oregon 20 years ago. That's not the way we should manage our fisheries. It doesn't help these people who think we're stupid anyway if we've got all of these crazy legal things going on. Let's take the appropriate action by the appropriate bodies, and when things get better, things get better. And that could be as early as 2005.
No, just you admitted that the lingcod are improving.
That's correct.
The fishermen are telling us that they're seeing more lingcod now than ever.
Sure.
And just to continue on like we've been going has been working if they're increasing and. I'm not sure I understand why we have to do this at this point. I don't even know why NOAA did unless...
You have to do it because...
In federal waters, there's less fish than there are inside the 3 mile zone. I don't know.
The reason we have to do it is both procedural and legal, and that is that we are on a rebuilding schedule that we have agreed to and is now a part of our regulatory process. The fact that they're rebuilding is exactly what we want to have happen. The fact that they're rebuilding shows that the actions that have been taken in the past are producing the benefits. We want to be out of this by 2009. Our scientists told us collectively that if we follow this process, we will be out of this by 2009. The new assessment that was done last year did not calculate the overharvest for 2003. That'll be a part of the thing they will be looking at when they set the 2005-2006 seasons. So it's the fact that we have to stay the course and stay on the path to recovery so we can talk about something else in the future years. So we can talk about, as we did this year, liberalizing where we can. What we didn't calculate, because we didn't know collectively when we did it, the size of the harvest in the last half of 2003. And that's why we're here today. That's why we're having this discussion. We need to maintain the course to get this stock rebuilt. It's federal law under the Magnuson-Stevens Act that a stock has to be rebuilt. And this is the pattern that we have put in place, and this is just a continuation of that.
Commissioner Flores.
Yeah, sorry, I missed part of this discussion, so I'm sort of coming in.
No, this whole thing has been since you were here.
Well, my understanding is that they caught quite a few fish last year. So,
sure,
and so there are quite a few more fish out there than what we anticipated. Is that what I'm hearing? I mean, I'm getting lots of calls on this, so.
Yeah.
So if we have an abundant amount of fish, more fish than we've had in some time, and yet you guys set the OYs last year, I don't understand why we need to do some restrictive measures here. You have to explain to me.
Okay.
It's logic that I can't follow.
And Maria, if you want to strengthen what I say, please feel free, if that's all right with you, Mr. Flores. But 03, OY, and ABC were substantially exceeded under that regulatory structure and under that particular set of numbers. What happened for 04 is that we were unaware of the strength of the harvest in the second half of 03. And so we raised the OY and the allocation to the recreational fisheries in California from, these numbers may not be exactly right, from 250 metric tons to over 300 metric tons, over 100 metric ton increase.
Okay.
Also, the season was lengthened in 04 over 03, substantially, I believe, at least by 4 months.
Okay.
Take those three items, an overage in 2003, a more liberal season in 2004, and you have a situation where you stand a very good chance, almost a guarantee, that you will exceed the OY in 04 if you don't take the regulatory action we are suggesting, which is the one fish in the 30-inch size limit. You cannot be overfishing these stocks 3 years in a row while attempting to have a rebuilding schedule. Yes, there are more fish out there. That is, and there are more fishermen, and the fishermen are very effective and efficient, and they are catching those fish, and they are exceeding the allowable catch. You can't continue to do that and meet the rebuilding schedule. That is how we got where we are today. We overfished year after year after year, and the stocks were going down. Now the stocks have turned around and are coming back. We are liberalizing a part of the opportunity to fish. In addition,
nobody's thought about raising the OY?
Can't raise the OY mid-year. We can raise it in 05 and 06. We raised it from 03 to 04.
So what we're talking about doing is being
conservative,
and then we're going to raise it next year potentially to what it could have been this year. So in essence, we're going to be, is this a yo-yo effect?
What effect?
A yo-yo effect. I mean, 1 year it's up, 1 year it's down.
You have been doing this long enough to know that the fisheries management is so inexact that you are always trying, you're always right on the edge. We have very strong signals that the edge this year is going to be another year of overfishing. If that's a yo-yo effect, I'm sorry. But the reality is we are both committed to rebuilding by 2009. We believe...
Is it clear? It's pretty clear that the stocks are making a rebound.
Absolutely. I think that's what the assessment will show, is that there are, in fact, more fish. And, in fact, the information I'm hearing is that
the stocks... That's probably why we're catching more fish, because there are more fish.
And we've also increased the area you can fish. And we've increased the time you can fish. And we compensated a little bit by raising the OI.
So if we had to raise the OI higher...
We had no knowledge to do that. We did not have knowledge at the time we set the seasons to
do that.
Had
we done that, then this guy would have a better opportunity for a more pleasant retirement by us not doing what we're trying to do to him today. It's Commissioner Hotoy, you know?
Joe, I understand that when we do emergency closures, when we do OIs, when we're trying to do rebuilding, that we've had success in rebuilding stocks. And it seems like we're somewhat of a victim of our own success at this point, but we haven't reached the level that we're desiring, which is the 2009 goal. But in the monitoring of reaching that goal, we're seeing many more fish come into play. The fishermen seem to be upset that the OIs and the acceptable catch levels are too low. We don't know that yet, though, for next year, do we? I mean, or we're suspecting that they might be lower than what could be allowed because of the success and the amount of fish that are seen out there. But taking this conservative view, which I'm supporting, we're eventually going to reach our 2009 goal, hopefully, and have a rebuilt fish population where we're not going to have to face these kind of things and obviously maintain it at a manageable level that is sustainable. I mean, isn't that what we're trying to do?
That's what it's all about.
And I can see why someone might argue this year, thinking that the OI and the acceptable catches are lower than what they suspect because they're out there on the water seeing more fish, but they're not where it's safe yet, is kind of what we're saying, isn't it? I mean, we're saying that if we allow an overcatch for 3, 4, 5 years in a row, we're in big trouble. I don't know why that isn't logical. I mean,
no, I don't either, and you're exactly right. We, you know,
and we're looking for long-term sustainability, not an immediate increase this year. Yeah.
Collectively, we did the best we could in 2003, setting the 2004 OIs and seasons and bag limits. The reality is that by increasing the OI, increasing the geography, and increasing the months available for fishing, having the data we now have from the second half of 2003 tells us that the risk is great, almost 100%, that we will exceed the OI in 2004.
Mm-hmm. Even if people disagree with what that OI level is, we will.
Absolutely.
I understand.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Actually, we're going to have
Maria.
Yeah, right after.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a couple of additions to Joe's comments. Just to make it a little bit more clear, the recreational catch in 2002, not only in 2003, exceeded the coastwide ABC. If the fishing continues in 2004 as it did in 2002 and 2003, and the OI gets changed for 05, 06 and increases, the share that would be available for California take is still almost half of what has been taken. So even if the OI is increased for the 05, 06 seasons, let's say doubled, it's still not high enough to allow the recreational catches that we've seen in 2002 and 3 and what we expect in 2004, unless there are some changes to how the fishery operates. So people are interested in seeing the OI increase. There's a great potential the OI will increase for 2005 and 6. However, it will not increase enough to cover what has been taking place in the recreational fishery over the last few years, and that is an important factor that needs to be considered in this also.
Can you talk to me a little bit about how you gathered your data? For instance, if you could talk to us a little bit about that.
The data for the catches?
Yeah.
The data for the catches are from the MRFs data program that has been operational on the West Coast for the last 23 years. It is the same data that are used in the stock assessments to determine what the level of the status of the stocks are, and they are used in the rebuilding analyses.
Can you tell me a little bit about how MRFs goes about gathering its data then?
MRFs gathers the data through direct observation of being with anglers on the water. There's an interview portion where they meet people as they come back off the water.
Are they doing this statewide, or are they just doing this in one particular region?
They do it statewide. We don't have that system this year. We're in our new California recreational data collection system, so we're transitioning to a new data collection system.
And how's that going to work?
That is going to focus greater attention on getting more precise estimates of fishing effort that take place, because we use expansions in taking what we see on the water, what we get from the field, and then we have to account for all those people we don't see and don't interact with, so we use expansions. The effort information is extremely critical to coming up with the numbers of catch, and we're focusing our California attention on getting better effort estimates so that the boundaries around our estimates of catch are narrowed down to things that are for some of the public more believable.
We've had some concerns about the data in the past, have we not?
Yes, we have, and that's why we embarked upon a new system of collecting recreational data, because we had large variations in estimates around how fine that number was that we were getting from the recreational catch. One thing relative to lingcod that we've seen over the past few years is a change in the actual catch rate of lingcod. That's actual observations of people catching lingcod, either keeping them because they're of size or throwing them back because they're undersized. So in the last few years, along with this trajectory of rebuilding the stock, we have seen in the field higher catch rates, and we expect that higher catch rate this year because the fish that are now reaching the size limits that we have on the books now, there are more of them, so we interact with them more frequently when you throw your hook over.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to take me down lingcod 101, okay? When we talk about commercial versus recreational fishermen, describe for me recreational fishermen, sort of what, how's that? Is that people from shore, people from party boats, own private vessels, a combination of all, or are lingcod typically, you have to be, 50 fathoms, 60? What are we talking
most
about?
Most typically, you will not see many lingcod caught from beach fishing, shore-based piers, most of the time. I would say that probably somewhere around 15% of lingcod are caught in water shallower than 20 fathoms.
Mm-hmm.
So the comment that Joe made about opening up more opportunity in deeper waters this year, in 2004, chances of running into lingcod are greater because we're out in deeper water. In Southern California, we're out to 60 fathoms. Along the Central Coast, we're out to 30 fathoms. So you've got much more real estate where lingcod live to find them.
Okay. Do we have an idea about how many people are out there on the water fishing? Do we have any sort of assessment as to what, how many party boats, how many private vessels? Have we done a survey in terms of, so are we talking about 20,000 people? Are we talking about 10?
We tend to talk more about angler trips because individuals go multiple times during the year. So the MRFs program or the California system will be estimating how many angler trips there have been made. It's difficult to talk about angler trips focused on a particular species when that species is part of a larger group of fishing activity. So there's a generic estimate of how many angler trips are taken in a particular area by different, whether you're on a party boat or whether you use your private boat. So there are estimates made in all of those modes.
Maria, one of the, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but one of the previous speakers was probably pretty being close to being on target when he said that 10% of the fishermen catch 90% of the fish. And when we're taking this data, are we talking and visiting the fishermen that are taking 90% of the fish, or that other 10% that are just occasional recreational fishermen?
Both. Where we get the occasional fishermen is from the survey of anglers by the phone. How many times did you go fishing? Person says once a year. So there's some mix between the frequent angler and the occasional angler. And so when we do our expansions, we consider the fact that there are people who only go occasionally, and there are some other individuals who go more frequently. So both of those kinds of situations add a bias into how you get use your numbers. So we take those into consideration.
Press your button.
I want to ask you a question about the fishery, not the fishermen, for a second. As I understand this, we're trying to rebuild the stock given this target date of 2009. And I don't know the amount, but we probably have a target goal to build the stock back to. And scientifically, we determined it would take until that time. The fishermen and the regulators and the scientists all seem to be saying there's lots of fish out there, maybe not enough yet to have reached our, target goal, but it seems to be more than anybody expected, thus the OIs are reached and the ABCs are reached and all that. What I'm trying to figure out, since all of us doubt or wish we had better data, is how do we know, or do we know, if we've reached that goal yet? I mean, is 2009 a magic number, or have we rebuilt the stock sufficiently to not have to do emergency, or are we still obviously, do we not know that? So I'm just trying to figure out, why is 2009 the magical date? And if we're all doubting the data, how do we know there's not enough fish already? I'm just wondering about that.
When the stock, and Joe can help me on this, since the most of the stock assessments are done by NIMS. The stock assessments are done on a schedule so that you can incorporate new data into the models, new information that might change some of the parameters within the model. And one of the things we saw last year with Boccaccio was a change in a parameter within the model. And so that resulted in a different number coming out. So they are done on a review timeline, and so that you incorporate the new information and you can check and validate how close you came to your projections in this run to the next run. Right now, in the stock assessment that we're going to talk about at the council next week for Lingcod, the stock assessment essentially looks at two stocks, a northern stock and a southern stock. And the southern stock is from middle of Oregon and all of California. There are projections to how well those, quote, two stocks have rebuilt. Okay. In the northern stock right now, from that stock assessment, it says it is 100% rebuilt. It has reached the threshold that the federal rules say have to be reached to say the stock is rebuilt. In the southern stock that we're concerned with, the stock has risen above the threshold, the bottom threshold that says it's overfished, and it is within this transition zone between overfished as a stock and recovered.
Okay.
That's where we are right now.
Between overfished and recovered.
And recovered. But there's a, but okay. They're rebuilt, excuse me, not recovered,
got it.
Rebuilt.
Got it.
Has an ESA.
I understand.
Sorry.
I understand.
Don't wish to use here.
I'm following.
So this is...
So we're doing well. We
definitely,
want to continue to do well.
Definitely.
Okay.
But the southern stock where that we access is not at the level that this northern stock or the whole coast can be said to be totally rebuilt, that now we can think about some other kind of management. And what you don't want to do, typically, is if you've got one portion of the stock at a lower level than another portion, and all of your fishing effort, or the majority of the fishing effort is where that marginal part of the stock is, you don't want to then fish that hard, otherwise you're going to not get to your rebuilding target.
Got it.
And that's one of the things we're going to have to talk about at the council next week, because California has such a large fishing population in the recreational sector. It's a very definite impact on a stock of fish. And so...
So that's probably what's leading to a lot of the folks on the water's concerns, that they see the fish stock rebuilt at 100% or almost there, and they think we're being too conservative in our allowable activities because we believe that it's just not there yet.
And that's because of the way the stock assessments have been looking at the way this... species is spread throughout British Columbia, Alaska, all the way to Baja.
And I also understand one more thing. I'm sorry, guys, but I just, the timeline, for instance, comparing like the stock assessment of 04 to 05 or whatever, and then there's another look at 07 to see when we've been, I'm just wondering, is there anything that can speed that up if there's other indicators that it's doing better? I mean, do we have to wait till 2007 to, or 2009, to say that we achieve what we're trying to do then? I mean, that's the only thing I'm trying to figure out. Is there any way to speed up the process, or are we just kind of just presume that this just takes that long?
I think there are something like 21 species that are being assessed.
Uh-huh.
There are a handful of people able to do the assessment, so they have this schedule set up.
Got it.
There's getting the data, processing the data, and then having a peer review of the results to make sure that you believe the science that's coming out. Changing that schedule is almost impossible. We've talked about it at the council for canaries, in fact. There's concern about the canary assessment and wanting to get one faster than its schedule. It is discussed, and most of the time the answer is probably not, unless someone can identify a group of individuals who might be able to do an assessment that aren't already committed to something else.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that okay?
Okay. Now we'll go to public comment.
Mr. Flores, did he finish his questions?
I'm going to come back.
Okay. Sean White, followed by Paul Weakland, and then Chris Dorsett.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Sean White. I drove here from Ukiah this morning. I had to leave at 5 o'clock to get here, but I care enough about this that I took the day off and came here to make testimony. For the record, I am a fisheries biologist. I run the salmon and steelhead program for the Sonoma County Water Agency. I am also a newly appointed member of the PFMC Habitat Committee. And in my spare time, I teach fish and wildlife conservation at the local community college. I want to talk about a couple of things today. I think what a lot of people are seeing on the water, I agree with. And then I want to talk about what I think it would be a much more appropriate long-term solution to sort of this yo-yo effect that Commissioner Flores was referring to. Back in 1999, this commission passed a whole suite of lingcod and rockfish regulations that I've seen have a very large impact. I've lived on the North Coast since 1989. certainly not as long as these gentlemen, but I haven't been around that long either. And in that period of time, I've watched rock fishing, and in particular lingcod fishing, going from I'd get my 20 limit of rockfish, and if it was a good day, I might catch a ling, and if it was a great day, I would keep a ling, to now I can get my limit of lings in about 15 minutes off the coast of Mendocino, where I live. The difference has been that dramatic. And the reason it's been dramatic is the suite of regulations you passed in 1999 were equally dramatic. During that time, you reduced the bag limit by 33% by going from 3 fish to 2 fish, and you reduced the season of effort 100%. Okay, we went from open all year long to approximately 6 months a year. That reduced the effort just by the calendar, but more importantly, that seasonal reduction protected these fish during the critical spawning seasons, which is why it's closed right now. Another really important reduction that you guys made or change was the depth restrictions. Back in the day, if we wanted to go out of Bodega, we'd make the 26-mile run out to Cordell Banks and mine fish from 300 feet deep because that was what you did. But nowadays, with the depth restrictions, people aren't doing that. And that's a huge benefit, both for lingcod and all of the other rockfish that we're trying to conserve. Because when everyone knows if you bring a rockfish up and you're not even targeting rockfish from 300 feet, you might as well keep it because its swim bladder is sticking out of its eyes and it's dead, okay? All that is over, and all of that is paying huge dividends. Okay, and I will tell you, the recovery is absolutely astounding. I fished the last day that was fishable for this season, I believe it was the 14th of last month. I fished one pinnacle smaller than this room in 30 feet of water, and I ran out of swim baits by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I had my limit of 2 fish in about 15 minutes. My partner had his limit of 2 fish in about 15 minutes, rounded it out with a cabazon, went after halibut and got my crab and went home. The recovery is that dramatic. So those regulations of 1999 have certainly had some very effective intended benefits. But I think also it's had some very important unintended benefits that are also greatly benefiting this resource, and that is the decrease in depth. Once you guys basically pulled everyone off Cordell Banks and pinnacles out in 203 feet of water, the whole way people fish for these has changed, okay? People used to sling gigantic iron, okay? And I know a lot of you guys don't get a chance to go outside. This was the standard deal at Cordell Banks, okay? This is 16-ounce treble hook hex jig. This was the standard deal. In fact, this one is from an old surplus trip when I chartered the Payback for one of my employees' birthdays. That was back in 1998. 16 ounces treble hook. High impact, okay? Anything that gets near that thing, you might as well keep it because hooking mortality for that is a done deal unless it's a shorty and you have to let it go. Nowadays, out of Fort Bragg and out of Mendocino and Albion, where me and my son fish, this is the standard deal. Single hook, lead-headed jig. That's what everybody has switched to. The reason they switched to it, it's a heck of a lot more fun. That's the real reason. You can't fish 100 feet of water with this, but now that everyone's pushed in on the shore, you can. You can fish this with a bass rod, and really, those regulations have transformed this into almost a bass fishery. You can catch and release all day with a single point hook, people shake them off, and people have a great time. And that alone has really had a major impact on the popularity of this, which is affecting your OY, but also in conserving the species by encouraging catch and release. And I think it's a gigantic benefit, both the lingcod and all of the other non-target species. You foul hook a greenling on this thing, and it's toast, okay? But nowadays, those days are over. So I think you guys have done a great job since 1999. I know a lot of folks will disagree with me on that, but I think the harvest limits you set back then are doing the job, and the fact that everyone's telling you there's a zillion lingcod out there right now is the proof in the pudding. I have major reservations with the new regulations, and I'll tell you what those are. First of all, by targeting 30-inch fish, you are targeting the most fecund portion of your population that remains from the pre-1999 regulation shift. If you don't know what I mean by that, lingcod generally reach sexual maturity at around 24 inches. Okay, no surprise, that's where the limit is, age 5 to 7 years. These 30-inch fish are 10 to 12 years old, and they are the survivors from the pre-99 Holocaust, if you will, okay? 24-inch ling cod is going to produce 50,000 to 60,000 eggs. A 30-inch ling cod is going to produce 300,000 eggs. Why in God's name do we want to target those individuals? That makes absolutely no sense, and that's why you protect the biggest sturgeon in the Sacramento River with the slot limit. It is the same mentality, okay? So even though I realize there's a larger spawning biomass of these smaller fish, I think if nothing else, you guys should move towards a slot limit and not attacking the biggest, most productive fish left in the population you're trying to recover. The other part that I don't like about this with the 30-inch limit is bigger fish are in deeper water. It's just that simple. Ling cod are territorial. They're very aggressive. Smaller water, smaller fish, bigger water. And if you push everyone into hunting for 30-inch fish, because people want to retain these. These make excellent table fare, and that's why people are out there. You're going to take everybody going from the 30 to 40 to 50-foot fishery, where this is effective, right back to the days of big iron, because you cannot fish this lighter tackle in deeper water. It's just not feasible. The other thing I don't like about it is it doesn't effectively cap harvest. All it's going to do is make the same fleet of fishermen that's out there now pound the water longer and harder trying to get that 130-inch fish. So I know we're trying to limit harvest, and we're trying to do it by making it so you can catch a fish that you're very unlikely to catch, but it is not going to do anything to legislatively reduce effort. So that is how I feel about the current thing. My big issue, however, is with the way this whole show is run. And I feel your frustration, Mr. Flores, completely. Number one, I think treating a fish like ling cod, which has a home range, according to all of the telemetry data that I read and tagging data, of about 4.9 kilometers on a coast-wide basis is just plain nutty. Okay? That's for managing pelagic fishes that move long ways. But pretending that there's an interaction between the ling cod off the coast of Washington and the ling cod off the coast of Santa Barbara is simply unrealistic and inappropriate. Also, you guys are wondering why the OI numbers and what people on the water aren't lining up. Why is that? I can tell you why. It's because it's a house of cards. I spent many hours on the phone with DFG staff, including Tom Barnes and some other folks I know that work at the Healdsburg office, and trying to figure out just exactly how do you guys gauge effort. I talked to them for a long, long time, and the MERS program was nothing short of totally inadequate. And I can tell you right now, if I brought that sort of data to my boss to manage our resource, I would get fired. Based on very light penetration creel efforts and 1,200 random phone calls to coastal citizens. That's not 1,200 fishermen. That's 1,200 random individuals from the county rolls, okay? All of you know, even politicians wouldn't use the sampling system this unfocused. Your chances of getting someone that holds a fishing license? Unlikely. Your chance of getting someone that actually goes after ling cod? Even more unlikely. And sometimes these projections are based off 5 to 10 actual hits out of those 1,200. Statistically, n equals 5, n equals 10, n equals 12 for a coast-wide fishery is garbage. Nothing short of it. We have a new and improved system coming out, okay? And the big foundational change there is we use the top fishing license off the book as our new sample, okay? It is a lot better. At least we're calling people that bother to buy a fishing license. But when you guys, as the folks who issue the licenses, have an opportunity every time you sell a license to narrow that field, to randomly select, to grope through the general populace, is silly. When I go to Washington State to fish, I have to return. That's fine. Okay, I got up at 5. You guys didn't even show up on time. I will finish. Every time I buy a license in Washington State, I have to turn in a report card for every important species I catch, from Dungeness to halibut, you name it, I have to turn it in. There is no reason, there is no revenue excuse for not taking the effort to collect that data at the point of purchase. So we're no longer guessing on effort. We know what the effort is, okay? So all of this voodoo doesn't need to be voodoo in the age of computers. There's just no simple reason for it. I also found it slightly entertaining as I reviewed your online magazine, Marine Management News, that the same gentleman that said, I have no idea what effort is, I have no idea what actual harvest is, I have no idea what standing biomass is, said that it is the duty of every ground fish manager, quote unquote, to leave no stone unturned in collecting that information. I don't even think we flipped one rock, okay? Short-term solution, leave it just like it is, okay? The reason it's recovering is because everything you guys did back in 1999 is working. Long-term solution, pursue the data so you guys can actually work with NOAA and the council to have management information based on what you actually know, not based on what you actually predict. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, and that was some good information.
Paul Weakland, followed by Chris Dorsett.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, goodness, there are more fish being caught. We have all these new regulations. But now it's an emergency because there's more fish than ever. Is it really an emergency, or is it just a way to accept another grant? Isn't it true that when it's declared an emergency, the grant door swings open? Is this the motivation and the hidden agenda? Since we know that the stocks are rebuilding, and let's talk about the federal policy, states' rights. My goodness, let's just throw states' rights right out of the window. We know how to manage California. We don't need the federal government. What has the federal government done for us? Oh, we have failed policies like the Mammal Protection Act and overpopulation of seals and sea lions. Well, we have failed policy, federal. Otters, we're going to introduce otters into California, and we're going to have them in a containment zone. But we have a mitigating memorandum of agreement, but we're not going to own up to it. This is what the federal government keeps doing to us. And then we have this emergency, Boccaccio. It's going to take 90 years from never being able to... Ha, 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 ha. Let's talk about the spotted owl. Let's talk about the data that nobody agrees with. Everyone has to pay for. It's sadness. There's no emergency here. What are you really doing? You're complicating the simple. You're confounding the obvious. Let's take back California for Californians. These people that clear over on the other side of the world in Washington want to tell us how to run our state. And unfortunately, our political appointees are willing to bend over any old time because they want another political appointment to a higher level. But we have to play with the feds to get it. Standing up for Californians in California, that won't do it for us. Figures lie. Liars figure. The numbers are worthless. Common sense. Do we have anything like that? Isn't that why the trust and the confidence is eroded and there is none? Here we go again. That is all.
Chris Dorsett, followed by Ross Smith, and then Dick Perrone.
I'm Chris Dorsett with the Ocean Conservancy's West Coast office in San Francisco. I'm subbing for Karen Reyna today. And just by way of background, I cover the Pacific Fishery Management Council activities. So I've dealt with this lingcod issue at the council level. I'm here to urge the commission to take whatever steps necessary to prepare for some kind of action in season this year. I don't have a problem with waiting until the council takes this issue up next week, but the state of California should prepare to be able to handle this lingcod problem under its own terms, because as you heard, the federal government is in a bit of a predicament here. There has been overfishing, which is illegal under the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Management Act for the past 2 years, and we're going to have to get that under control. I'd like to concentrate on two good things first. One is the stock is rebuilding. The latest assessment shows that 1999 was the highest year class on record, meaning that there were the most amount of baby fish born that year that fishermen are now seeing in the fishery. Secondly, the rebuilding strategy that the state of California and the council has adopted is a good one. Each year as the stock rebuilds, fishermen are given more and more opportunity to catch those fish. In other places, they use rebuilding strategies where you set the amount of fish for 10 years, for example, and you run into problems with what's called the rebuilding paradox. That's as the stock rebuilds, they're easier to catch, and you fill your limits faster. In the rebuilding strategy that the state and the council is utilizing allows you to catch more fish as the stock rebuilds. However, you have to make sure that you stay within the limits to ensure successful rebuilding. The numbers from the assessment show that in the north, the stock is rebuilt, and that, again, is north of I can't remember exactly where in Oregon, but it's about the northern three quarters of Oregon and Washington. In the south, it's about 70%, and it's projected to meet the rebuilding target by 2009. However, these numbers don't take into account the very significant overages that have occurred in the past 2 years by the recreational fishery. The latest numbers I have, and these might not be the latest that are available, but it shows that in 2003, there was 355 metric tons for the entire West Coast available to the recreational fishery. The California recreational fishery took 667 metric tons through October 31st of last year. So it's a significant problem that needs to be addressed if we're going to successfully rebuild. The other bit of good news is that 2009, in terms of rebuilding, is very short when you look at bocaccio, canary, cow cod. Those are 30, 50, 90 years. We're talking 5 years, and lingcod will be rebuilt. 2005, if action is not taken in season, it appears that there will again be significant overages leading to overfishing, which is illegal under the Magnuson Act. There's more room for fishing this year, which is again going to lead to a greater chance that there are overages. This is going to be a continuing issue in properly managing the West Coast's marine fish species. And that's accounting for catches and trying to keep catches within appropriate target and threshold levels. Even when lingcod is rebuilt, there's going to be a target level of catch associated with that. We have to make sure that target is met and not exceeded regularly in order to maintain a sustainable fishery. Finally, I haven't had a chance to look at the analysis behind the 30-inch size limit and the one fish bag limit. I hope to look at that and other options before you take some final action. I would just, if there are steps that you need to take now to prepare to take action, I would urge you to do so. Thank you very much.
Don't go so fast. I have some questions for you.
You got a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Flores?
Are you a scientist or?
A marine biologist.
Okay. As a marine biologist, are you troubled by the data? I mean, the way it's gathered? I mean, the gentleman before you brought up some interesting points. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I took an awful lot of statistics courses, and I tell you what, it's pretty troubling to me. I mean, we all know that there's been some problems and issues with the data. But you basing your organization, taking an opinion based on that data, I mean, you're comfortable with that stuff, or?
Well, it's really easy to pick on MRFs, and I could do it myself. But as easily as I could say it underestimates or overestimates catch, I could say it underestimates catch. In a perfect world, we'd have more resources for data collection, and we would be able to get better recreational data. But MRFs is the accepted standard in fisheries management and has been for the last 25 years or so. It doesn't mean it's the best, and the state of California is moving ahead with hopefully a better system to collect that information. But when you look at the recreational fishery versus the commercial fishery, I compared, if you're familiar with water pollution, to this point versus non-point pollution. The commercial fishery, you have points of where fish is unloaded, you have the fish sold to dealers, and you have a paper trail there. It's much easier to account for those fish. With the recreational fishery, especially in California, you have so many ports, so many people fishing, and to create a system to collect data that people are going to feel very comfortable that every last fish is being counted is going to take an incredible amount of resources, and I just don't know if that's feasible. But MRFs is the accepted standard, and we've been using it in the past. Now people don't like the answer. It's easy to pick on MRFs.
As a marine biologist, I want to ask you, do you think that it makes sense for us to change the limit from a fish that produces 30,000 eggs a year to a fish that produces 300,000 eggs a year as a marine biologist and from the Ocean Conservancy's viewpoint? How does that make sense when we're trying to build that population rather than increase it?
Yeah, in my own opinion, and maybe not my organization's opinion, I have some concerns with size limits, and that normally when managers try to restrain fishing effort, they raise size limits and hope that you're going to just throw those fish back and they're going to live. And I understand lingcod doesn't have a swim bladder, so it doesn't run into some of the same problems other rockfish do, where supposedly you throw a lot back dead. That is troubling to me, and it's why I wouldn't give an answer on what to do at this point in time, because I haven't seen the background analysis for the 30-inch size limit. But if these fish do have a very good survival rate, maybe it'll work for lingcod. I just haven't been able to look at the numbers.
Okay. Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment?
A couple more.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I just wanted to make.
Go ahead.
The gentleman that spoke before, I just wanted to tell you that I appreciate the fact that you got up at 5 in the morning. Maybe I should have done that as well. And furthermore, I'm really glad to see that you brought your kid with you. He has a chance to see democracy working firsthand, and I really admire that, and I wish more people would bring their kids to public forums like this.
Russ, although you and Dick both spoke during the public forum on this item, I'm going to allow you both to speak again. I will limit it to the 5 minutes this time because the other commissioners didn't hear what you had to say, and I think for you to come this far and not have your voice heard by all of us would not be right. And before you even start, Russ, because I did hear some of your comments before,
I'm going to ask questions.
Remember to include your part about the 10% of the fishermen catch all the fish.
Well, since I teach fishing as a hobby, I find so many inept fishermen, it's not even funny. So anyway, that's. And my father taught me that 10% of the fishermen catch all the fish, and we proved it. We caught fish all our lives, and I've caught fish right straight through. But my question was, do you have any idea how many boats in a given day will you see? These are private boats. Will you see from Bodega Bay to Point Arena? I believe it or not, you'll go up, drive up the coast for 20-some miles or 30 miles, and if you see 5 or 6 private boats in millions of acre feet of water and taking one pole and two hooks, It's impossible to touch the ling cod or any other population. That's equivalent to fishing a 20-acre pond every once in 5 years and taking your limit, and you're going to fish out that pond. Can't happen. Can't happen in the ocean. There's more days up on the ocean. See, I have had a trailer there for 20 some years, and I observe the ocean right off of the cliff, and more days without boats than with. During the winter, November to April, there's rarely more than one or two boats in that length of area. And I challenge any one of you to come up, go fishing with me. I'll take you out for free. And you watch and see how many boats are out there fishing. Or take a drive up the coast and take a look. And you people are giving out this data, which is BS. It's literally, it's flawed. And I have never in 45 years been questioned by any state or federal agency, nor any of my friends that I know have been questioned how many fish you take. And I'd tell them right now, I'm a diver. I was diving during the spawning season here to observe the ling cod because I love to watch them. And the males were in the holes. Almost every hole I looked into had fish in them spawning. And Dick Perrone and I one day caught 30-some ling cod in trying to catch a limit of rockfish because every time we dropped our line, we caught ling cod. And every time we go, we get 10, 15 ling cod. One day I went out by myself, I caught 22. This is, I haven't seen this in years. And to see every hole full of fish spawning, I've never seen that before. And these are fish between 24 and 28 inches. These aren't huge fish, but they're laying lots of eggs. However, you see, we caught blues and we caught cabezon, and both blues and cabezon were stuffed with ling cod eggs in February, just this past month. So I've been diving since 1958. So I have observed, I've watched when the Russians were fishing up on the coast, they were taking everything. We would find a school of blues here, school of blues up there. Shortly after the Russians left, within 5 years, blues had exploded to the point where that whole coast was covered with blues. And there's still many, many thousands of blues out there. All you have to do is dive down, and that's what you see most of. So anyway, I hope my input does some good.
Rush, remind me, what area do you fish?
I fish from Fort Ross primarily to Stewart's Point. And I've had a trailer at Timber Cove for, I'd say, 27 years, maybe longer.
Now, are you still using the 16-ounce lure with the treble hook, or are you doing the worm thing with the single hook up there?
I'm using a jig, small jig, with a fly teaser, and the fly is made out of bucktail, and it's deadly.
And you caught plenty of ling cod, but yet you haven't been surveyed.
Dick and I kept. We started out fishing one day. We had a small jig with a I can't even say it. Squid teaser. Hanging on to the jig. Okay, we caught our limit of lings, took those off, caught more and more and more lings, took that and put a little tiny jig on, kept catching more and more and more lings. We couldn't get the rockfish that we were after. So does that give you any idea?
Thank you.
And I'd love to take you out. I can show you how to catch fish like you never saw before.
Any questions? Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
No.
Mr. Perrone?
Yeah, that's not around Catalina.
I know there's a lot of motions going on here, but, you know, a few years ago, we could catch 20 fish, and whoever the powers would be have reduced us down to 10 fish, and within those 10 fish, they put some limits on the 10 fish, and you're actually hurting the economy on the coast with all the motels and the bait and the gasoline, and it costs me, if I take my boat over, I live in Ukiah, if I take my boat to Fort Bragg, I'm out a $50 bill just to go fishing. And if you restrict me down anymore to one lingcod and 10 fish and put that sublimits, it's not worth going over there. And another thing is I've been over there many days, and I've probably killed more fish than I've taken because of these sublimits and restrictions. I've caught canaries out there till they come out of my ears. And you bring them up from 60, 70, 80, 100 feet of water, they die. There's no question about it. They're bladders are out their mouth and out their ear, out their eyes. You can't do anything about it. But you can't keep them. I'd rather keep the first 10 fish I catch rather than throw 10 fish away and keep 10 or throw 12 away. And I've done it many times. So I think a little common sense and putting these limits on fishermen, if you do that first 10 fish, would make it a 12-inch limit, sure, you'd lose few, but you wouldn't lose the amount of fish that are caught out there now. And I'm not the only one that does that. There's a lot of people out there that do that. So I think these everybody has their own ideas, and they're all well-meaning, but a little common sense should come into this. And by restricting our fishing, do it right. I mean, the 30-inch lingcod is not a good idea, not at all. I'd like to see you simplify the regulations, simplify the slot limits, simplify everything, and reduce the bycatch. It'd make it better for everybody. But if you go over there and you can get a motel and you eat food at the restaurant and you buy bait and you buy gas and you pay a launch fee, you buy insurance on your boat, and you pay $50 for a fishing license to catch 10 fish with a sum limit and throw most of them away because you can't catch them in one lingcod coming up. I think you guys are going out the wrong way. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, dear. Maria, the new California system that we're setting up, in the process of that, we need to try to derive some kind of a way to where the department's talking to, not to people like me who's caught one lingcod in the last 2 years, but the people that have been doing it for, I don't think there's better science than the fishermen themselves that have been doing it for 40 years. And every time we get one of these issues, it's the fishermen that are doing it for a livelihood have never been surveyed. So we got to figure out some way where we're talking to the real people that got hands-on information for us.
I have one comment and then one quick question. My comment is, it's great to hear from the veteran gentlemen who live in the most fabulous, pristine, abundant area of California's coast when it comes to lingcod, and obviously they know how to fish and know what they are doing. But I don't think that either NIMS or the council or the department is saying that's where the problem is. I think what we're hearing is the problem might be, if it exists, because we're still debating data and facts, if the problem is an emergency, it's down south where there are a lot more boats, a lot more fish, a lot of more different variables, and that's what might impact the total recovery of the species along the coast. So I'm just saying, it's great that you guys have fish. It's fabulous that you're so good at fishing. And I'm not sure that's the story everywhere. I just don't know that. So I'm just trying to be cautious about the good luck you're having. The question I have and that was just my comment, is I'm confused too, and maybe I don't need a tutorial now because we don't have to act, but I know that Mr. Sean Wright and Chris Dorsett both made comments about the 24, 30-inch size limit and the difference in the reasons. I still don't get why it helps if we do that either, and there is that catch-22 about, you know, the difference in egg production and the attempt to cut down on catch by size limits, but I'm not sure I understand that we're doing the right thing there. And can you give me a short version, or is there a long story that I have to learn about, or what? How can I know this better?
Well, I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to be able to explain that particular analysis to you right now. One of the things, though, that I would say is when we consider any management option, we have to balance it off of some other alternative. One of the biggest comments that we've gotten from the public anglers over every time we talk about management options is their desire to be on the water as much as possible. So, yes, in some cases it sounds like one management option is the best way to go because it fits the need in that direction. On the other hand, there are some competing desires by individuals, and there's also relative to how much time you're on the water, how much time you have to interact with other species that may not even be part of this discussion. And in one case, in the Central Coast, it's canary rockfish. So it's when we do our analyses, we have to sit and think about higher production from larger fish, fewer of those animals out in the water relative to some of these smaller fish, numbers of days on the water, areas that people are going to be fishing, what depths, that kind of thing. And I don't know yet how much of that balancing went on to come up with this regulation. So what I can say is between now and during the deliberations next week, the issues of slot limits versus time on the water and interactions elsewhere, we will be discussing that with the people who are involved in this analysis.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Maria. Let's go to the next item, huh?
Yeah, well, the department's asked the commission to consider putting out a news release that the commission will consider taking emergency action at some future date, depending on what happens in the discussion at the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting next week. So if you want to do that, or
they want a notice?
They want permission to put out a press release from them?
No, I think
they're go to notice.
Go to notice.
Well, on emergency action, you don't actually go to notice. What you'd be doing is putting out a news release indicating that the commission on X day will be considering this matter. Again, the department and NOAA Fisheries does not want the commission to wait until your April 1st, 2nd meeting because NOAA Fisheries would like to have the regulations in place April 1st.
When's our next? Let's see. One more. Can't wait till our next hearing, huh?
Well, I mean, can I just ask a question here to the rest of the commissioners or discussion? I mean, I'm still concerned with a number of the requests, like slot limits and things that I still need to understand. I'm understanding that even though none of us like the data, that we still keep meeting optimum yields and ABCs, and we're, you know, breaking the Magnuson Act and in violation of the law until we get better data collection and all that. I'm not ready to vote for an emergency action today, but I don't want to surrender our authority and our ability to deal with this to the feds or to judicial action on any kind of organization, a group that might be upset by non-action. So I'd like to somehow retain control that this commission has over state activities regarding this issue. Since we're not being asked to go to public notice, But yet, we also don't have to vote on this today. It seems quite easy, I would think, to say we're willing to do a press release that someday we may or may not consider voting one way or the other on this to retain control over the action. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'd like to be able to vote on this when I know more. If we need to do that, I certainly wouldn't want to give it up today. So a press release seems to be a temporary solution. So that's just my thinking on it.
Yeah, the reason the department, if the commission allows us to do a press release, a requirement for emergency action within, that's a 10-day notice requirement. That puts you after the PFMC meeting.
Yeah.
So by doing this, it sets you up to, if you so choose, you can still maintain your ability to conform to the federal regulation because of the OAL requirement for, I think, no longer than a 10-day review. And if you choose, you could still adopt regulations that would conform by their date, which is April 1st. If you don't do this, you run, depending on what happens, et cetera, you would eliminate the option to conform, and you would, for some period of time, depending if when and if you ever took up and took any action, of being out of conformance, yep, mostly just for a month at least, in Southern California, south of Point Conception, and in Northern California, north of Cape Mendocino, because the Central Coast is closed until May 1st anyways. So, but we felt this was a reasonable option that retains exactly what you were talking to, Mr. Hatoy.
I want to know what the heck it is that the feds are going to do if we don't. I mean, quite honestly, I don't like the fact that I have to make a decision based on conforming with the federal government. I mean, if they want to make a decision and preempt us on something, they ought to do it, and then they'll feel the backlash of the public on it. But I certainly am not going to make a decision just because the feds think that we have to and think they know that our fisheries better than we know it.
I'm not saying we do that. I'm saying we want to keep control of it, and if we don't make a decision...
No, I understand I understand your point of view. I just have a real hard time with that.
And I'm not saying how I'm going to vote eventually if it comes before us. I'm just trying to say I think we have a legal and squeeze going on right now that we want to...
Is there a way that we can do this so that we don't get the public riled up as though the decision has been made, it's a foregone conclusion? I mean, that's the thing that I really dislike, because, you know, my phone will go ringing off the hook as well as other commissioners. I've already gotten phone calls on this.
I think we've made that clear, though. And when
we make that clear here, but doesn't always
issue we need to issue the press release in a way that says we've made no decision, but we want to retain the right to be able to do that. Because I think everybody here hears me saying that clearly.
And we're looking to see what the PFMC says.
Well, I think in your press release, you could, I mean, it's your press release, technically. You could put whatever you want in that press release saying, in the interest of maintaining the option to conform, going to set up, schedule an emergency action. You're not saying what you're going to do.
Right.
Consider. And you're doing this because you still have concerns and questions.
We want to learn some more about
that. That's what the public needs to understand. Yeah. That this is simply a request from the department to the commission. It's the commission decision, and we're not ready to make that decision. So we can put out a press release to that extent, and hopefully have some better and more information when the time comes. And if it's not satisfactory, we don't have to vote to do it.
That's correct. And we can also wait to see what the council does. I mean, that's what's really important.
So I don't think we need a motion. We just directed the director to draft a press release from the commission.
Yep.
And we'll move forward.
Make sure we get that
keeps me happy.
Very good.
Thanks. Thank you all.
Thank you.
It'll go out from the
commission.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you guys for traveling as far as you did.
Thank you.
Our next item was to be a presentation by Dr. Reg Barrett from UC Berkeley regarding the wild turkey study or collection in state parks. We were notified earlier this week that Dr. Barrett was unable to make this. Deputy Director Mastrip, do you know if Mr. Barrett or Dr. Barrett will be able to attend our April meeting?
Not yet. He's looking at his schedule to reschedule that. We'll notify the commission as soon as he is.
Okay.
Should give it a couple of thousand turkeys by then. So we can coincide with the
That would be the April. The next meeting is in Sacramento, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, in April is Sacramento?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good.
So, yeah, it would be to Sacramento.
We're going to have, the demonstration for relocating, I hope. We need to set that up.
April 1st and
2nd. Is it that early?
Sacramento, 1st and 2nd.
Okay. I'll work with you, Bob, on getting that set up, okay. If you like.
Okay, thank you. Is Mr. Root present? Okay. Mr. Matt Root has made a request for reissuance of a special authorization to harvest 6 to 10 fall run Chinook salmon from the Sacramento River for cultural and educational purposes, and also is making a request to have the Wintuck tribe from Hay Fork Valley also receive a special permit to harvest salmon in a traditional method. Commissioners have a copy of Mr. Root's letter.
Thank you very much to the commissioners. I would first like to begin by saying good afternoon to all of you and welcome to Redding, California, the home of the Wintu people. I am a member of the Wintu Tribe of Northern California. I am the executive director of the El Palm Caves of Gran Chaviria. I am also a cultural representative of the Toyon Wintu Tribe.
Justice letter.
I've been made aware in the last couple weeks that the jurisdiction to issue special use permits to tribes in the state of California to utilize traditional methods of take has been delegated to area department offices. Pursuant to this, I have met with area fisheries personnel to meet satisfactory harvest limits on behalf of the Wintu Tribe of Shasta County. Traditional salmon harvesting on the Sacramento River on behalf of the Wintu here has been approved by local department of fish and game offices, the North Coast Fisheries Office in Redding. In addressing the salmon harvesting by the Noramook Tribe of Trinity County, action has been postponed at this time on behalf of the Noramook Nation to do traditional salmon harvesting on the Trinity River and the South Forks, pending further legal and allocation issues because of these issues that are specific to the Trinity River. I refer to Mr. Neil Mongi for any questions of the council.
Any questions? Mm.
Thank you very much for your time.
Do we have to take a vote on this?
No, there's no action. That was just
a
report, right? So.
Does the department? Does the commission want to hear from the department, Mr. Neil Mongi?
Yeah, might as well.
Oh, there he is.
Come on up, Neil.
He's sitting back there hiding.
Thank you, commissioners, commission staff. Neil Mongi, fisheries biologist, Northern California, North Coast Region. Basically, everything that Mr. Root had mentioned is correct. I believe that there is some misunderstanding or miscommunication regarding commission action. Last year, the commission gave the authority to the regional manager to allow the take of these fish in the Sacramento River. I believe Mr. Root felt that the commission needed to take action again. We had a meeting with Mr. Root and have clarified the roles of the department and the commission. I feel in the future that he will be coming to the department for this reissuance of a letter or permit. In terms of what Mr. Root has proposed for the Sacramento River, it does not appear to have changed from last year's proposal, of which the department had no concerns regarding his educational cultural take of these salmon. We felt that was a very good idea. We'd like to participate as much as we can. As Mr. Root had mentioned, he would like to extend this to areas on the Trinity River. At this particular time, our discussions with Mr. Root, there are some concerns. As you're aware, the Klamath and Trinity is a quota fishery, managed fishery, with other tribes having a legal authority to harvest a certain number of harvestable surplus of fall Chinook. Mr. Root had mentioned that the initial proposal dealt with not necessarily reduced to specifically educational and cultural purposes, but some subsistence of a fishery on the Sacramento. He was looking at 6 to 10 fish on the Trinity River. Within his proposal, it mentioned 100 fish at 3 different locations. That becomes more of a subsistence fishery and requires some legal review by the department if we could actually go that route. And also some concerns from the other tribes that have a legal right to those fish for accounting purposes. So at this particular time, Mr. Root will be discussing that legal authority with the other tribes in the Clarence and Trinity. At the same time, the department will seek legal counsel regarding, and I would assume the commission, through Mr. Cunningham, whether the commission has the legal authority to allocate fish to these other tribes based on the legal precedent that's set regarding the allocation of the Klamath Trinity fisheries. So hopefully in the future we can deal with this internally within the regional manager signature, but there is some question and still some gray area amongst the Trinity fisheries. So at this particular time, we will be working with Matt, Mr. Root, and trying to iron those issues out. Any questions?
Any questions? Commissioner Hathaway.
I'm sorry.
Just one question. I think negotiating with Mr. Root and the tribe is obviously the way to go. I'm just wondering, when we voted, I don't think I was here then, to give the authority to the regional people to deal with a cultural take. That's one thing, but to change the quota on a fishery and create another subsistence fishery, isn't that a whole other different thing? So that's why you're looking at it like not the same request, and you're coming back to us later with what you're going to propose, or will it just be decided at the regional level?
Most likely you're correct. Exactly. You probably weren't here at that particular time, and yes, it goes back that instead of putting these fisheries within the regulation booklet,
right,
it's just simpler to allow the regional manager to do that. But with the Klamath and Trinity being its unique situation, that there are legal issues there. So there, I haven't taken legal counsel yet or talked to legal counsel regarding that next step. So at this particular time, I don't anticipate having to come back to the commission and ask the commission to take a vote on this. I believe it can be done within the regional fisheries function or regional manager signature, but even that, I believe, kind of planting the seed that it is a managed fishery, it is a quota fishery, and there are legal implications, yep, of other subsistence fisheries being added on to the tribal take or the non-tribal take.
Okay, just checking. I have no opinion on it. I just find it an interesting question of when an existing tribe has longstanding interest now wants to have a role in a quota fishery. What happens? So I'm just, yeah.
Right. I believe, you know, there's a lot to do with the Pacific Fisheries yep. Management Council and legal precedents that are set and other tribes that would be affected or which could come to the Fish and Game Commission would be if the allocation for these types of fisheries from other tribes that aren't recognized would be taken yeah. from the non non-tribal fishery, which would be us, yeah. and then definitely you would be involved in that.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it for that item.
Okay. Item five, we posted on our webpage that the request of Yorktown has been withdrawn, and they wish to resubmit it at a later date. So we won't be dealing with that item today because of that, or any testimony today because of that. We'll move on to item six, Mr. Director.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Item six is receipt of the department's legislative report. Julie Altman with the department's legislative unit will be making this report.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members. Julie Altman, Department of Fish and Game, Legislative Representative. We just had the deadline for introduction of bills for 2004. Thank goodness. That day alone, over 800 bills were introduced. We're still sorting through them. So the list you've just been given is a preliminary list of the bills that we've identified that might be of interest to you. Certainly, these are high priority items for the department. The only repeat bill you're going to see is the first one, SB 89, the ferret bill, the perennial ferret bill. Interestingly, though, we've already gotten an approved opposed position on the bill and have communicated that to the author. So I was really excited about that. That's a pretty quick turnaround for an actual bill position from the administration. So we've also been lectured pretty hard about the need to turn around our bill analyses and provide them to the governor's office with the return promise that we're going to get positions on bills and be able to go out and work bills and lobby bills this year. And that's almost like a new approach to legislation for us since we haven't had many approved positions in the recent past. So getting out and working some bills will be fun. Engaging some of our stakeholders will be really great. Looking forward to that a lot. If you want, we can just run through the list of bills. I think you'll probably be interested in most of them on today's report. I would imagine Mr. Flores will be interested in Senate Bill 1153, depredation authority for the department to issue depredation permits for wild turkeys. Currently, there are only 7 species of mammals currently authorized for depredation permits, and this is a issue that's come up probably the last 3 or 4 years, primarily in the Napa County area, where turkeys apparently are really fond of grapes, and it seems Cabernet in particular. I've learned that recently. So this is an effort on the part of Senator Chesbrough. We spent some time with his staff and some of the local ag interests in our regional office last month and have gotten already some correspondence from the Turkey Federation asking for some changes to the bill, and we're reviewing those and we'll be prepared to talk to Senator Chesbrough about them when the time is right. So, we've got, I think the next big bill is Senate Bill 1319. This is to create a new state government council for ocean protection. It's a pretty thinly written bill right now. I'd expect to see a lot of changes go into it. At this point in time, though, the council appears to be granted authority to create marine protected areas. So I know you'll be interested in that, given what's going on in that arena. Interestingly, too, we see this a lot. The bill is proposed to be funded by existing bond funds in Prop 50. So going back to the everybody wants it fund source. Rabbits, Senate Bill 1434.
Well, before you go on, I'm sure we'll want to take an official position on 1319.
When do we understand it?
Well, I mean, they're trying to take authority from us, so.
More than that. I mean,
in some respects, they can have it, but.
Let me just say one thing. I know about this because this came in the heels of this last year. There were two national commissions, the Pew Commission, OSHA Commission, headed by Leon Panetta, and the U.S. Ocean Commission. They all had recommendations about starting departments of oceans in states, and then John Burton picked up the ball.
Correct.
But just did this kind of skeleton bill, right? And,
exactly.
And we don't really know what it does yet or how it's funded, but this was sort of out of recommendations out of the Fed saying coastal states should have these. And it's sort of like, as I get it, on the model of the State Lands Commission, and they're trying to figure out what authority it would have, what it wouldn't have, who would fund it, and it may or may not include marine protected areas, but it's sort of like a new Christmas tree that they're hanging things on. So I don't know where it's going, but I don't know if we want to take a position on it or not, especially yet, is all I would say.
It hasn't been heard in policy committee yet, and we've only heard just responses from the author's office.
Have you gotten authority to take a position on it yet?
No, we haven't even completed our analysis of this bill.
So. Well, I would think in the future, if they want to get stuff passed and take it away from us, they should at least reserve a seat for us to sit on that council.
Yeah, I think that as the bill moves along, you'll have a lot more information maybe to base your position on.
Okay.
Rabbits, cottontails. This is a big issue. I know. I know that Mr. Flores and Mr. Hatoy got involved at the last commission meeting in this issue. This is the Southern California senator with the majority of the homeowners complexes in his district, Senator Ackerman, is heading the bill, but there are at least five other Republican members who are really anxious to get this going on. At this point, it's a spot bill. My strongest feeling is that they're going to do just what Senator Chesbrough did and stick cottontail rabbits in the authorization for depredation permit section 4181 in the code. I would think we'll see that language in the bill before it goes to hearing.
Don't I have to go to a public hearing then to be a hearing officer? Did you guys vote?
We were trying to handle it through regulatory. Yeah, regulatory. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Without a special hat.
Well, I'll certainly keep you up to date on this bill. I'll be curious to see whether it makes it out of its first policy committee, and look forward to hearing about the progress on your front as well. Bottom trawling, Senator Alpert has a bill to grant the commission authority over all bottom trawl fisheries, which currently you don't have halibut and cucumber and one other. Excuse me. It will also sort of state the intent of the legislature to get out of the bottom trawl business unless it's justified through work of the department. This is going to be a huge issue. Mm-hmm. This is just going to be a huge issue this year. And I think that there'll be some wild discussions in committee hearing, and they would be the same discussions you'd have over here with the issue. So we'll see where it goes.
Everywhere we don't have authority, you would give it to us.
It would just take the entire gear type and give it to you. The halibut, for example, is statutorily authorized for the halibut trawl grounds, and sea cucumber is a limited entry fishery currently. That's part of it is a trawl fishery as well, and so that would come to you for full management.
And why can't the legislature just ban the gear type?
Well, I don't know. They could.
I'm just wondering.
They certainly could. I think that the commission's established itself as fairly credible in commercial fisheries management, and so they may decide to, you know, this is a workload that you would enjoy taking on.
Well, we might. They could do it then. Thanks.
With additional staff, right?
Yeah. Well, they all come with appropriations and staff, Bob.
private property, Senate Bill 1728, this is just sending shivers through our department. Excuse me.
Which one?
About seeking authorization from private property owners before we enter private property, except in genuine police sort of exigent circumstances or executing a search warrant. This is an Anastad bill. I'm not sure what the origin is. I'm sort of frightened to call their office, but I will find out what the history is. I'm sure they'll have some nightmare.
Scott Valley.
Yeah. So
isn't the department already required to do that under legislation carried by Senator Leslie a few years ago?
Yeah, that specifically didn't apply to law enforcement, though. It was targeted towards
biologists.
Right. Yeah. So we'll watch this one. I know that we'll do a good bill analysis on it. Here we come to the first hole in my report. As I was compiling the important bills, I neglected to remember that we're sponsoring two bills. One of them is Senate Bill 1740. It's not on the list. It's authored by Senator McPherson, and it deals completely with our Office of Spill Prevention and Response.
I've seen that.
It's the first major cleanup effort in the aftermath of the enactment of the Limpert-Keene-Seastrand Oil Spill Response Bill. So when you do see it, it's a daunting, thick government code bill. But one of the exciting things in it, and I'm really proud to be part of this, is we're creating a grant program in it out of revenues that OSPR collects out of penalties levied that can only be used for environmental enhancement purposes. Currently, those monies are distributed through the budget process, and we all know that that's a little bit, you got to really work the process. And so this is going to be a new grant program, and I think it's going to be a really great thing, a lot more knowledge about it out there. I think it'll be great, and it's all for research and development on responding to spills and cleanup and good environmental stuff. Senator Knight has a bill to provide free hunting licenses to disabled veterans. I know, given the earlier discussion, I'm glad you're still here to hear this part of it. Currently, we provide a reduced fee license to disabled veterans with a 50% disability. This would make them free. In the past, the department's, you know, it's always a dollars and cents issue for the department, but.
Well, they only charge $7, right? I think it's $7.
$4.
It's $4
yeah.
Currently?
Yeah. Unless that's adjusted. Zonkey, do you know? Okay, it might be, I'm sorry, it might be $7. Yeah, it's $4 in the code. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it negligible?
Yeah.
I mean, $7.
Yeah. Okay.
Trapping. You were about to hear trapping as an issue tomorrow, I think, as we try to implement Senator Scher's bill requiring trapping licenses. This is the second effort on the part of Assemblymember Bermudez to exempt the structural pest control operators from the new licensure requirement. I've also heard recently from the Department of Pesticide Regulation that they have licensees that they would like to exempt from this new requirement as well. So my staff is working really closely with Sonke's folks to try and make sure we understand the complete universe before we come to you and recommend how we proceed. So. Runners got a bill to increase fines. They told me that they're not high enough. They were really interesting. I tried to get the background, and they just said, "Well, it's what we want to do, and it's not a spot bill." And so I don't really know what they're driving at. This is one of the really interesting code sections that addresses boroughs and some really interesting things. So here's the first of the commercial fisheries bills coming your way this year. Would require Dungeness crab to be managed by the commission and after the adoption of a fishery management plan. The bill contains a lot of other details that you normally wouldn't see in a fishery that's coming over to the commission for management. Assemblymember Cogdill is back with his efforts to redirect some of the hatchery funds. We've We've engaged with his office and him personally at a much greater level this year, and I get the sense that there's probably a little more sympathy than there was last time around when they just simply wanted to redirect 45% of fishing license revenues to the hatchery program, which frankly is an amount far greater than we could spend. So.
I was just going to say, I know I've been having discussions with the director. I know that they're doing some real creative things over there in the Eastern Sierra.
Absolutely, with Hot Creek.
And
yeah.
Hot Creek and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
And that's the way we're going to have to go. It's going to have to be public-private partnerships and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. And actually, Mr. Cogdill's staff has been involved in that mm-hmm. discussion, too, and we're exchanging info all the time. Yeah. So really making an effort to make him part of that, since he is part of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Here's another hole. AB 2760 is the department's second sponsored bill. They'll be on the list next time, I promise. This one's a Patty Berg bill authored by Assemblymember Berg. This is largely cleanup, but it does cover a couple of pretty important things, including eliminating what we perceive as a loophole for retention of foreshore halibut in the commercial fishery, clarifies dive boat licensure requirements for sort of the party dive boats that go out fishing, and it also extends a sunset for commercial fishing in the hook and line fishery for existing hook limits. So there are some really important components in this bill. Smittian is going to provide an exemption from CEQA for marine protected areas, which I hadn't even really thought about the out year ramifications of establishing new MPAs and the CEQA ramifications. So it'll be interesting to hear this go. You know, it would be a project, so there would be a lot of in-depth analysis that would accompany any designation. Last on the list is the second commercial crab bill, competing interests in the crab fishery. This one has the added element of authorizing the commission to enact an add-on on the landing tax for crab to fund a crab marketing council. So it'll be interesting to watch the progress of these two and see when and if they come together. And when and if the commission's interested in taking on Dungeness crab, which does sunset fairly soon, and it's a huge fishery.
You're going to get a lot of extra staff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we did with the MLMA.
Exactly. So it's going to be a raucous year. I'm really surprised to see how many really substantive bills there are in light of everything else going on. But
no dove, no bear.
No, nothing so far.
So far.
So far. Yeah.
No dog.
There are some spot bills out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So now are you back? Are you the head of the ledge unit now? Or?
That decision hasn't been made yet.
Okay.
I'm just doing...
Well, it's nice to see you here.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
been
you.
A while.
Yeah. No, it seemed important.
Yeah, nice to get a report.
Good. Good. My pleasure. If you want any more information on any of these, please give me a call.
On the crab bills, do you know who the sponsors are?
PCFFA is behind Assemblymember Berg's bill,
okay.
And I'm not sure on the other bill. It seems to be an effort to favor in-state crab fishermen. So I'm not sure who's behind. I would think PCFFA as well, but I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You want to make the hard decision. You're not going to be hard for this.
Yeah. Well, you just give me the sign, Okay.
Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
Virginia Hanley.
Virginia Hanley, the Fund for Animals. And that report was worth the trip up here all by itself. Considering other things that got canceled that I had come up for. Number one, I know of no plans for any bills on doves or bears.
Good.
If you heard about that from last year. And many of the bills, it was really interesting to hear Julie's list, because we do share a whole lot of bills of interest. And we do put out a legislative alert, and I can see at least one or two bills that we should be adding to that alert. It was quite interesting on SB 89 on the ferrets. I got a communication while Schwarzenegger was running that, oh, he's for the ferrets. They got some assurance from him that he wanted to legalize the ferrets. So it's very interesting to find that they have an approved opposed position on that. That'll be quite news to those people. I think that's what did it. He liked that ferret. Well, someone else has talked to him since then, I guess. But I want to bring up some of the bills, a very important one that Julie mentioned, the AB 1926, the Rudy Bermudez bill. I would hope that that the department could oppose that bill, and that or that the commission on its own oppose that bill. And that is one to grant an exemption to the pest control operators across the board, which they tried to sneak a bill. That's the only word I can say when you take a bill that was about sewers and turn it into a trapping bill, and then try to get it heard even outside of the when the time had been up, the deadline passed for bills to be heard, two-year bills. Well, we did find out about it and raised concerns about it, and one of them being that here we're just starting the regulatory process with the department and the commission. So for these agencies to just want blanket exemptions when they don't even know at this point what they would be exempted from is really unfair. It's unfair to everybody who is covered by the bill. And when the bill was passing, we didn't hear anything from these people. Now to want exemptions is really, if nothing else, extremely premature. Also, Mr. Bermudez's bill violates a legislative rule that you can't introduce the same bill twice in one session, and that's exactly what he has done. So we hope that that should be opposed, at least if the people want to come back next year or deal with the commission with this matter. There are a lot of people that are under this bill who do predator control trapping, who do nuisance control trapping. These people, when they are doing the same thing, of those designated species, this is not about mice and rats and gophers. It's the designated species which the commission will designate. There's already been a list that is covered in the environmental documents that are already of the animals of interest. And those are animals like the fur-bearing mammals, which are specifically listed in the code, and then the non-games, which are your coyotes, particularly the weasels, raccoons, possums, skunks. And not all of these pest control people even deal with those species of animals. A lot of them don't want to deal with them. They're in with the mice and rats and the bugs, and they are licensed because they have poisons. And so that's an entirely separate licensing and a separate issue. It has nothing to do with SB 1645. And so I really urge your action on that, and that's just the first bill. On the AB 2140, Sharon Runner's bill about raising fines, which we're in support of, it's my understanding from her office, it is most interested in the animals in the desert, and particularly the desert tortoise. The SB 1153 Chesbrough's bill on the wild turkeys, I received a copy from Chesbrough's office of recommendations from the Turkey Federation, and we are really very much in agreement with a lot of the suggestions that they make. So Chesbrough's office says, boy, it would be wonderful with the Wild Turkey Federation and the Fund for Animals sit down and on the same side of turkeys. Yep. But they want to be very conservative about just willy-nilly running in and killing off all these turkeys. And in fact, a lot of the suggestions that they want to apply to the turkeys, we feel that should be applied to the rest of the animals that are on that depredation permit list. SB 1807, William Knight on the hunting, we are in opposition that to eliminate all hunting fees for disabled. They already do receive a break. You might be interested in knowing a number of years ago, legislation was defeated once or twice about this issue because of concern that you want to know that anyone who is hunting has the ability or that any wounded animal is going to be pursued and not just have animals shot and run off to die even more painful deaths. The existing regulation does say they have to have an able-bodied person with them. But we feel with the amount of expenses that somebody has to go hunting, with your travel, your ammunition, your guns, your housing, all that, they can afford to pay a hunting license fee. And we need that as Mr. Kellogg and I have already talked about today. The department needs these fees. They need the money. We need it for the wardens and for enforcement. And so to give away hunting license fees, I don't think is appropriate. The SB, well, wait a minute. The other ones that, yes, the SB 1728 will be in opposition to that by Anistad to prohibit any fish and game warden from coming on property. That is just sends shivers through me, too. And we opposed the Leslie bill when they prohibited biologists from coming onto property. And yes, we'll be interested in SB 1740 and would be in support of that, McPherson's bill, which is sponsored by Fish and Game for about the oil spills. So that's it. And once again, please take some action on AB 1926. Everybody should have to go through the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next item is receipt of department informational items. I understand there's not an update on the department's budget at this time, but we'll have one at the next meeting. Update on SERFs. I think Maria will provide some short comments since we're just starting in data collection.
Thank you. Very short. Not much to report from last month's layout of the reporting schedule that Steve Crook did. We have been unable to... The angler database that we're putting together is coming online a little slower than we had anticipated. License agents aren't returning their license books as quickly as we would like, so we're working on trying to encourage them to return those so we can get the names. And that's about all relative to the SERFS program, except that the rec. There's a committee, RecFin committee for the West Coast, that oversees the recreational data. They are meeting in March, the middle of this month, and they are going to be addressing some of the issues relative to the data that we are now collecting in California. How do we know that the data are better than what we had before? When would they be available for release to the public? What data might be better than out of some of the data that we're taking, which is more reliable at this stage? So they're starting to talk about how we're going to use the data that we're going to be collecting. So we will be reporting back on any guidance gotten from that RECFIN committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
I believe you had another item, too, you wanted to bring up?
Yes. The next item concerns what I spoke to you last month or brought up to your attention is the two-year management cycle for groundfish that is beginning in the council arena next week in earnest. I indicated last month that the department would be asking for guidance for management measures at the April commission meeting. And so what I'm trying to do now is kind of give you a heads up of the kind of issues that I'm going to be bringing in front of you. And I would respectfully request that we have some sort of a marine subcommittee meeting prior to the April meeting so we can dig into this very complex information. If it fits in with the schedule. Well,
we're in the process of trying to set that up.
Great. Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of give a little bit of a general overview of the kinds of management considerations that we're going to be making for California in the council process, and then highlighting some of the issues that you may choose to give the department guidance on as we make those determinations and recommendations at the council. First of all, I want to just remind you that the constraints under which we've been managing in the last few years are still in place, and we will be dealing with issues of boccaccio, optimum yields, ling cod, which we spoke about this morning, canary rockfish. Primarily, those are the three in California, besides cow cod in the south, that will be constraining species for us. We will be dealing with some overages in catch from the recreational community relative to black rockfish, which is something we didn't anticipate until the data became available at the end of December. So we will be looking at management measures that keep the catches below those OY levels and ABCs for 2005 and 6. One of the things I mentioned this morning is that the potential increase in the ling cod OY is good news, and anglers are very interested in that, and they're expecting to get more fishing opportunities, and the reality may be that they don't get any more fishing opportunities in 2005 and 6. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. The department is looking at a preferred management approach that starts our fishing seasons in a more conservative manner, and then based on some sort of tracking and triggers, opens management options to be more or less restrictive later on in the year if it's possible. So we're going to be asking the commission as to whether that is an approach that would be appropriate for California to undertake. We're going to be looking at grouping some of our OYs. Currently, we have three nearshore groups, and we have Cabazon, Sheephead, and Greenlings as separate state-managed grouping. We're going to be looking at whether we can revisit those groupings. So we may be asking input from the commission on how you want to deal with the state-managed species in relation to the federally managed species. Currently, we're managing on large geographic areas. There's been interest on our part and the public's part to manage on a more refined geographic area. So we're looking into possibly being able to do that, as well as trying to manage some of our coastwide or regional OYs between the allocations between the recreational and commercial fishermen. And I think one of the key issues that we're going to be asking more of an affirmation from the commission, not guidance, is within the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan, we have a management tool which directs the department to be more conservative in the management of cabazon, since it will be our first assessed stock. And it is more conservative than the council approach, and we will just be seeking a public affirmation of that conservative, more conservative management in the commission venue. We're considering also looking at or identifying potential hot spots along the coast where catches of some of the overfished species tends to be higher. And if we can identify those areas, we may be looking at possibly isolating those areas, prohibiting people from accessing, in other words, some sort of a closed area, so that fishing can be done outside of those areas rather than making things more restrictive by including those areas. So that's generally the kinds of approaches that we're looking at for the 2005 and 6 season. And we will be preparing some detailed information relative to some of those issues for discussion at a subcommittee meeting if we can. If not, we'll do it at the April commission meeting.
Okay. Do you know when that written material might be available?
It's probably going to be after the middle of the month in March, because we're at the council all next week. So I would say the third week of March, if not right at the end, last week of March.
Okay.
It's a tight schedule here between two council meetings and two commission meetings, you know, 3 weeks apart in that same kind of schedule. So try and get it as soon as possible, believe me.
Appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Any questions? Next is, does the department have any other informational items? Next is receipt of commission informational items. We did not have a marine subcommittee. We are working on trying to set a date for that, either the third or fourth week in March. I'll just point out to the commission that we have finished the rulemaking calendar for this coming year, turned it into the Office of Administrative Law on Monday. There's going to be, according to this calendar and the information we received from the department on proposed regulatory items, there'll be 26 different regulatory packages that the commission will be dealing with this year. As you probably know, half of those will be marine region regulatory items. And also, as you know, even though we have this on paper, it's subject to change. And as item two on the agenda today, we never know when an emergency item may be coming to the commission, or if there's some other regulatory item that comes up that we have to deal with. So this is probably just the minimum number of regulatory packages that you'll be dealing with this year. Also at this time, I'll talk about our upcoming May meeting. Right now it's identified as May 4th, 5th, and 6th in San Diego, part of which will be a joint meeting with the Board of Forestry. Our original schedule indicated that May 6th would be the commission meeting. However, there's working groups that the Board of Forestry deals with from the UC Extension Program, and they have developed a annual meeting of those working groups to be held May 5th in San Diego, and on May 6th, a field trip that would be looking at the areas affected by the major fires this last fall in Southern California. So I'm proposing that we change our meeting date from May 6th to May 4th so we can participate in with the Board of Forestry in these matters. So just a heads up so you can amend your calendars. There'll be more information sent out on this.
That actually works better for me because I wasn't going to be able to be there on the 6th. I was only going to be there on the 4th and 5th. So.
Okay.
I'm there.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Our next item is receipt of federal agencies informational items. Mr. Joe Blum from NOAA Fisheries.
Mr. President, members of the Commission, Joe Blum, NOAA Fisheries. You may have heard or read that last month a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in such a fashion that Central Oregon Coastal Coho are no longer listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. This is a case that's about 2 years old. It was the case where a district judge in Oregon determined that our splitting of hatchery fish off of wild or natural spawning fish was not appropriate under the Federal Endangered Species Act. A salmon within an ESU is a salmon within an ESU, no matter what its origins are. And so the Ninth Circuit at that time stayed that order, and the species have remained listed until, as I say, in the middle of February. As a part of that order and as a part of another judgment that was handed down against us on listing activities, we have undertaken a review of all of the ESUs or species of salmon on the West Coast. Eight of those will be proposed. A listing action will be proposed on eight of those by the end of this month. None of those are in California. There are two, Puget Sound Chinook and Hood Canal Chum, and then six species, three steelhead and three Chinook on the Columbia system. The ones in California will be proposed sometime this summer. So we have done a complete review. I think I've reported in the past that last February, our biological review team, February of 2003, our biological review team came up with their recommendations to management. Those have been on our website for anybody to look at. California Department of Fish and Game did provide us comments on that activity. What we've been doing since then is looking at conservation measures that states, counties, local government, and private sector have in place that might modify the recommendations from the scientific side of the organization. And we have also been attempting to develop a hatchery policy in conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And those things are starting to come into place. And as I say, under court order, we will put a proposal out on eight species the end of this month and on the remainder sometime this summer. None of the actions to date have affected California, so all of the California species remain listed. There are some court cases, a couple in front of the same judge, that have the same argument that the judge may choose to rule on pretty soon, and one of those is Southern Oregon, Northern California, Coastal Coho. So I will let you know when that is transpiring. Also, I will obviously let you know when the proposals are out, and that'll have a comment period. In the past, it's been 60 days. I'm assuming it'll be 60 days again, and we will really be looking for comments from states and citizens of California on those listing proposals. So that is federal update.
Thank you, Joe.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Blum. The next item is legal counsel informational items, and Mr. Cunningham has an item he'd like to bring up to the commission at this time.
Mr. President, members of the commission, Bill Cunningham, your counsel and deputy attorney general. This is an unusual, if not a unique, request in that I think in the years that I've ever served as counsel for this commission, and I'm now up to, in two separate cycles, almost 8 years of counseling this commission, I've never chosen to initiate a request for any kind of additional action on behalf of this commission. But time has come here where I've seen some facts that I do think require some kind of address by this commission, and I would like to, at this time, ask to perhaps exercise a prerogative I don't have, but please bear with me. As you know, almost two years ago, the commission went to a very much limited access fishery for the spot prawn trap fishery. I think it was effective April 1st of 2002. And the original structure for that fishery was going to be essentially 17 Tier 1 permittees who would be able to fish up to 500 traps and take essentially an unlimited amount of spot prawn during any one season. And there would be an additional potentially 13 Tier 2 fishermen who would be limited to fishing 150 traps and taking only 2,500 pounds of spot prawn during a season. It turns out that that kind of structure did not actually fully develop after the application cycle was completed in July of 2002. It turns out that we do have a fully allocated Tier 1 fishery, but we only had four of the possible 13 Tier 2 permittees attempt to get Tier 2 permits. And since that period of time, I've had an opportunity as your hearing officer to hear several cases in which one thing is becoming, unfortunately, very painfully evident, and that's that the Tier 2 fishery, as originally contemplated, providing only for 2,500 pounds of take in a year's worth of fishing for spot prawn, is not working. The amount of shrimp we're talking about here is such a small amount, and the cost of obtaining these shrimp so high, that it essentially is a non-economical fishery for Tier 2 fishermen. And what was originally contemplated by our regulations also was that over time these Tier 2 fishermen would transition into Tier 1, that as Tier 1 people themselves chose to leave the fishery, Tier 2 operators would be given an opportunity to enter the fishery until all of the Tier 2 fishermen were gone. They would all become Tier 1. Well, we're going to get there, but by the wrong reasoning. We're essentially going to drive, with our current regulatory structure, the Tier 2 fishermen out of the business. They are not going to swap. They're going to disappear. So please bear with me. I bring this to you because I think this problem came to your attention through other sources almost a year ago when people pointed out that Tier 2 fishing was difficult, if not impossible, that 2,500 pounds was difficult, if not impossible. And I would like this commission to perhaps consider amending its regulation to accept that Tier 2 can catch up to 5,000 pounds, which will perhaps make it more economical, at least to the point where those Tier 2 fishermen may survive long enough to accomplish a change to Tier 1. Right now, we aren't going to have anybody who's going to make it that long. At least that's what I'm being told. I'm hearing those facts from several fishermen. These fishermen are, to say the least, emotional about this, but I do believe what they're actually telling me. So, again, this is an unusual event. It's based upon unusual circumstances. I would like this commission's authority to have staff go to notice to consider the possible change of Tier 1 or Tier 2 from 2,500 pounds to 5,000. It's my understanding that there will be little or no impact. We're talking a maximum right now of four Tier 2 permits. There will be no more Tier 2 permits. I mean, the application date for all of these people is closed. It's been closed for almost 2 years. So, again, this is an unusual, the request is brought with the best of intentions and with what I believe are good, solid facts behind it.
How many Tier 1 do we have?
We have 17 is my understanding.
And they're unlimited?
They have 500 traps and unlimited take.
What Tier 2, you said this is going to impact four?
There's four Tier 2 permits currently in existence. I am told that at least one of those does not actually fish anymore.
How did you come up with the 5,000 figure?
Based upon at least some testimony I've received from one of the Tier 2 fishermen, the question asked was, if you can't make it at 25, can you at least make it with 5,000? And the answer was yes. When this issue was also brought to the commission by one of these same fishermen almost a year ago, a little over a year ago, the same number was used. So my suggestion here, I have no idea why not higher. I used the number that was brought to me by the fishermen themselves and brought to this commission by the fishermen a year ago. And part of the reason I raised this issue again, too, is a year ago when we listened to the requests, it was our understanding that this was going to be one of the many programs Marine Region was going to try to address and to develop. And as we know, everybody's been struggling with all of the other regulatory programs as well.
How many did we have? How many have we lost at a Tier 2? Do you have any idea?
At present, I don't. I would suspect that we may have, as I'm told, we did get four who originally received the permits, and I'm told that of those four, at least one currently is not fishing and will probably not fish again, and that at least one of the four, so essentially two of the four, is fishing only at a very limited level. Okay. So we have two people who are attempting, apparently, to still work as Tier 2 permittees. And again, what they're hoping to do, as I understand it, is to stay viable long enough and to keep their traps long enough that at some point in time they will be able to obtain a tier one permit as a tier one permit becomes open.
Mr. President, I have no problem with that. If it needs to go higher, I have no problem with bumping it up higher. So
we'll need a motion on that.
All right,
the department would like to make some comments first.
Thank you, Mr. President. Maria Vojkovic for the Marine Region. If you remember about a year ago, we had the discussion of the spot prawn trawlers and a conversion program for the spot prawn trawlers into trappers. The department committed to putting together a program with the assistance of the both the trappers and the trawlers. The department has been meeting during the last few months with both parts of the fishery to come up with a viable program to convert the trappers to trawlers. The department is finalizing the documents to put before you in the middle of April so that you can have a discussion meeting in May. Within that package, we address this issue of Tier 2 conversion to Tier 1 or to higher catch limits that Mr. Cunningham has brought to your attention. So the issue is being encompassed with this trawl trap conversion package.
With the number of that?
Certainly with the 5,000, but since the package isn't completed, it can be a range that's larger.
Is this something that needs to be done immediate, or
if I might, and I understood the department was working on this package, and I didn't mean to necessarily try to do an end run or anything else, but my understanding from talking at least again with only one of the four tier two people is that the need here is one that appears to be of immediate resolution, and that the problems with waiting for the final total package of trawlers and trappers and the reevaluation of this is that time period, even at the most optimistic of estimates, would be that we don't actually have the amended regulations in place until midsummer to late summer, and that may itself be a time period that people will not be able to economically survive. In fact, I'd be perfectly happy to suggest that to the extent we go to notice, we could go to notice with the proposal that all I'm trying to suggest here is that there be some interim relief until this final package with the address of all the issues is put together. Unfortunately, when this issue was brought to the commission as Ms. Wojkowicz pointed out last year, the Tier 2 question and the trawl conversion to trap question was rolled all into one big ball. But they really are two separate problems. And the Tier 2 people are actively trying to hold on and may or may not make it to the July or August time when the regulations actually change. So, again, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If it solves their problems, it would solve their problems. If all this proposal is to be deemed an interim proposal to at least get something online, we have something here that is, at least would solve the problem temporarily within a cycle and a proposal that's already in draft language. So, again, I'm perhaps just suggesting we try to look at this separate issue a little more expeditiously than the total package.
I just have a quick question, and I think it's for both of you. If I understand what we went through during this process, it wasn't the pounds per shrimp being taken. It was not an issue there. It was the gear type, and the trawling was the problem. And we're going to convert to trapping. Encouraging more trawling instead of conversion to trapping wasn't the goal, I don't think, even if the existing Tier 2 trawl limits are too low. I mean, I'm concerned about that.
Trap.
Converting to trap. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Then I'm fine with that. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to follow along and make sure we weren't trawling.
I move, Mr. Chair.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Could I get a clarification? The proposal would be increased from 2,500 pounds to 5,000, but I heard some discussion about a possibility of a range. Do you want us to include a range?
Yeah, why don't you give us a range? Go up to 10,000.
Okay.
Yeah, because it seems like that's real arbitrary, 5,000. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it means. I just don't know what it means. So.
Sure. Let's give them the ability.
Oh, they
could be three, it could be eight. You know what I mean?
They gave the number. So
do we have any idea what the tier ones on average bring in? How many thousands of pounds?
I don't have that information. I don't know if Maria does.
You know, Maria?
I'm sorry.
How many thousands of pounds the tier ones would bring in under their permit?
I believe this past year they brought in 168,000 pounds total, the fishery.
Yeah.
And there's only these four that are limited to 2,500 pounds. So the tier ones brought in.
With this 14?
100 and, you know, I'd say 160,000 pounds.
10,000 pounds each.
Okay.
10,000 each, yeah.
Yeah. If I might also, Mr. President, members of the Commission, again, because the issue is being examined in perhaps a larger package that will come to you, do you want us also to consider whether or not this proposal should be given some kind of a sunset clause or an interim status that it will be effective until the issue is reexamined or not at the consideration of the conversion as well? Or do you want to go ahead and separate
this? No, we'll just pull it out and just separate.
Okay.
And that's my druthers, though.
Okay. Thank you very much. And again, Mr. President, thank you for the acceptance of something that is otherwise rather extraordinary, and I do apologize for the nature of this request.
Okay. Thanks for bringing it to our attention.
I don't think an apology is necessary. We consider you as one of the staff.
Yeah. That's your job.
This is taking liberality.
We're going into
Concludes our public session at this time. We're going to go into executive session, and we will reconvene the public meeting at 8:30 a.m. tomorrow morning
late
in this auditorium.